not me. We may give Jay another chance to talk. Depends on how good he is during the presentation. And then we'll do a little more Q&A or whatever as we move on. Here's what we're going to talk about. We're going to do a little overview. Those of you, the first, and I apologize, they told me they were capping this at 100 and then they let 123 in. So some of you may not have actually gotten this presentation. We'll make it available out on the web so you can download it. But most of you should have the presentation and your very own Ask Nick Penn for AskNick.com. That's AskNick.com.
Ding.
Ding. Thank you. Thank you very much. We're going to give a little overview about it. We'll talk about cleaning up your system and keeping it clean, and then we'll talk a little bit about backing up. So let's start with what security is, who among us is actually vulnerable, and a couple of other things. Before, if you're going to
should we mention what happened on Monday?
We should mention what happened on Monday when it's an interesting problem. There's a virus called Zobot. The problem is you go to different sites and they give it different names, so it's a little hard to tell exactly what's going on. But it hit. It's actually not a big deal. That particular one, not a very big deal. It only hits Windows 2000 machines, and it only hits Windows 2000 machines that weren't updated the week before for Microsoft's update. Naturally, all of CNN and all of ABC got hit. Consequently, it became a huge news story.
Because it affected them.
Because it affected them. Frankly, I do systems administration for a living. That's how I make my living. I believe that the systems administrators at both CNN and ABC should be shot in public more than once. They had a whole week to update,
And the other thing is it exploits a known hole in Windows using the NetBIOS port that no reasonable system administrator should have left open. So
that's
they
right.
should have been able to fix this years ago.
Right. The reality is when you're talking about security, the standard is deny. Deny everything. And the exception is allow. Let something happen. And that's what good systems administrators do, and that's clearly what these systems administrators at CNN and ABC did not do. So, yeah, but the problem was there was another one, at least two more, one of which simply dropped the keystroke logger into your system and moved on. It used the same hole. And it would drop a keystroke logger in, waiting for you to go to secured sites. It didn't even do anything, so it wasn't even active until you went to a secure site.
Like your banking,
then it would activate, collect all that data, and send it out to another website.
And a keystroke logger is just a program that logs or watches every single key you push and reports that back to someone.
And records it.
So it will watch you type in your username, it will watch you type in your password, send it off to someone else. They can now log into your bank as you.
And naturally, even though you're on a secure website, it's getting the actual keys you press. So it gets it before it gets encrypted to send out over the web. So at any rate, to do security, you have to define what you consider to be critical data. And you have to think about what the consequences are if there's a problem. Now, who's vulnerable? Well, everybody's vulnerable. We know that. That's a silly question. Everybody is vulnerable. So here's what you need to be able to do. You need to be able to detect that you're being attacked or have been compromised. You need to contain that compromise. You need to recover from it, and you need to teach your family a little bit about this stuff. Some of you, you're the only one on your machine, so you need to teach yourself. Many of you have children. They just need to be locked in a closet until they're old enough to move out.
No, that's good business for me.
You're right. Yeah, everything we're doing here means these guys don't get the machines into fix. So we'll talk about what these various things are and what they mean. A virus.
One thing, just before we get into this, though, is as Nick was starting to say, though, you know, these updates. One thing that I see a lot of folks, as the machines come into my shop, that don't take the time to do. You know, you'll get that warning that there are updates for Windows. And I guarantee you probably half the folks here will sit there and say, yeah, I'll get to it later. And it's those updates. Yes, they take a little time. They're even a little more painful if you have to use, you know, dial-up. But unless you do those updates, take the time to do those. Because otherwise, it could be another week or 2 weeks before you get that notice again. And as we saw, within 1 week, that worm, that patch was out there. Folks didn't take the time to update their systems. Doing those updates, bam, they got nailed. So if you see that little notice come up, Windows XP will do it, so will Windows 2000, letting you know that there are updates. Take the time to do them, and that will help you as far as that aspect.
Okay, suppose you get to the update page and you don't understand what the update is.
If it's marked critical, do it.
Do it.
Okay.
You'll never understand what the update does.
Sometimes it says, you know, for such and such a program, which I understand.
Right.
There's one today, it's a virtual something or other.
Yeah, definitely you want that one. If it says critical, you want it. If it says optional, then look to see if it's a program you have.
Okay. They had a story on NPR today about the viruses.
Yeah.
And they were talking about maybe some of the reasons people didn't do that. Because sometimes when you do updates from Microsoft, you're signing your own death warrant on something.
Yes.
I.e. DirectX C.
Right.
Just running Windows is taking your machine out.
Well, in the case of these people with CVS and that, I guess they were waiting to see. They did some, and we're seeing if they were okay without taking them.
We have a couple of test systems, and when a patch comes out, we download it immediately, we test it overnight, and then we determine whether or not to send it out the next day. You can't wait, because what's happening is the script kiddies are just waiting, and we'll talk about what those are. They're just waiting to see an exploit, and bang, they'll hit it. So if you wait 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 days, then you too could be a systems administrator at CNN.
And the virus got the virus was released, what, Friday night?
Yeah.
So they waited until end of business Friday when all the computer people had gone home for the weekend. So the virus had all weekend to propagate. People came in Monday morning, they were already infected.
Right. Wait.
Okay. How do you know that you have that whatever happened on Monday?
Your machine will
keeps rebooting and you can't do anything ever. If you had it, you'd know it.
Yeah, you've got to use your bootable CD.
As opposed to the general problem of your machine rebooting itself all the time anyway.
Right. It just means you're running Windows.
Okay.
Yeah.
Another part of that was ActiveX. Is that good or bad?
You got to have that.
Okay.
But it's bad.
you got to have it.
Okay.
The question was, is Service Pack 2 critical? And the answer is absolutely, because it fixes all the problems from Service Pack 1.
But the one thing you should do before going to Service Pack 2 is make sure that you have all the current drivers for.
Yeah, one of the
example, your motherboard, your video, your network card, sound card. So any of those devices, make sure you have those updated and installed.
And the problem is only Windows tells you there's updates for your stuff. You also need to find updates for everything else in your computer, your motherboard, your network card, your sound card, your video card, all those other things. If you have a name brand computer, Dell, Gateway, etc., you go to their website and all of your drivers will be listed to be updated. If you have a home-built computer, you have to manually go to every single website of every single thing in your computer and update everything manually, which is a horrible pain in the ass.
Neck,
thank you. Which is why a lot of
sometimes
people...
Sometimes you aim high and you hit low.
I was aiming low and you went high. And so that's why a lot of people don't do it, because it's such a pain to do. And what the gentleman was referring to is you load an update from Windows, it may make something not from Windows break. It may make something from Windows break too, but it may make some other program break that you then have to go and update that. So it's kind of a continual thing. You always have to check for updates on everything inside your computer.
Right.
I'm running Mozilla as my default browser, Firefox.
Yes.
And what I've noticed is when I get the notification from the Microsoft Security Center, I'm running XP, that there are updates available, and I try to update directly from the Security Center, it doesn't work. I'm assuming that's because Firefox is my default browser.
Right, and the reason is you have to actually run Internet Explorer and then go to the site. And the reason is Microsoft checks to see, it's like a petulant little four-year-old. It looks to see what browser you're running and then simply refuses to run if it's not Internet Explorer.
And it doesn't give you an error message. Exactly.
So the best thing to do is set in your update preference, set it to download automatically and notify you when it's ready to install.
Right, so and then you rarely, now for this last thing, you really needed to go to the Windows Update site, www.windowsupdate.com. And then that would, and then you run some code there, and then that tells you what you need to do to install all the bits and pieces. And you might need to do it two or three times to get all of the updates, because it'll do a critical update, tell you to reboot. You go again, it's got some other updates, tell you to reboot. Go again, until it tells you no more updates.
And the more often you do the updates, the less frequently you'll have to reboot and get more.
Right.
Now, question, if you set it to update automatically, you're going to get everything, not just the critical.
Right.
Correct?
Right. Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that okay?
Yeah. Most of the time, 99.9% of the time, it's okay. When it's not, it's one of those spectacular failures. Oh well, I don't know what to tell you at that point.
I just had a problem with Windows Update. It was yesterday. I run Zone Alarm Security Suite.
Sure.
And I know I've had updates in the past. All of a sudden now, I couldn't get it.
Right.
I would have to shut off the Zone Alarm in order to do it.
Isn't that nice? You have to shut your security down in order to get updates to keep your machine secure. Thank you.
Is there any way to fix it?
No, because probably some of those updates could be with the Service Pack 2. If you folks haven't gone to Service Pack 2, one of the delightful things that Bill Gates has deemed that he's going to do, because he knows better than you, is install monitoring both the antivirus, the firewall, and whether you have antivirus software on your machine.
And since you're not using Microsoft's firewall, it won't work. But Microsoft's firewall doesn't work very well by itself anyway.
And some of the updates will sit there, even though you've turned it off, and we'll turn it back on. So then you got that running in the background, and you got Zone Alarm. Boom, 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 boom. Nothing gets out.
Right. It's a tough problem right now. There isn't a real good answer. Well,
there's Ubuntu.
Or Mac.
There you go. But that's where that problem lies. Yes?
Zone Alarm came out about 3 weeks ago with an update to 6.0.
Yep.
And about 2 weeks later, because of the problems that they were reminding us, that's 003.
Yep.
So they have
Yeah, they do. And you need to update those kind of things regularly. And that's what we were just talking about before. You update one thing, you got to do something else. It's a problem, and there is no general solution.
But smaller companies like Zone Alarm can update faster than the megalithic Microsoft.
Right.
See, here's the thing.
Some programs like Zone Alarm will tell you there's an update available automatically.
And the problem with this, we've come so far so fast with computers. And, you'll get some software, it was working fine, you do an update. Well, they're still trying to cover a broad spectrum of machines. You stop and think about it, not that I'm a big fan of Microsoft, but we use it. What we've come over, just the time when Windows 3.1 was out, we didn't have, the scanners, the printers, the DVD drives, and all this other stuff that now comes standard on most machines, USB ports. The configurations are so varied now with hardware, and these software writers are trying to write to a platform that it's constantly growing, getting faster, getting bigger, the level of cache on the machines, the speed that they're running.
It's virtually an infinite
ROM drives.
It's virtually an infinite number of combinations of PC hardware you can have.
Right. So don't get upset when sometimes you do an update and it stops working. Because again, they're trying to do it to the masses.
Well, that's one of the advantages that Apple has with their Mac. They control the operating system, they control the hardware, so they know that their OS is going to work on their hardware, and they don't have to worry about this guy's driver and that guy's driver and this other guy's driver.
Well, Apple used to have that advantage. They're about to not have that advantage anymore. To get back to this stuff for just a minute, what makes something a virus is the fact that it spreads from one computer to another, generally all by itself. It may mail itself to people. It may attach itself to files, it may attach itself to the floppy or whatever, right. So that's what makes something a virus. Now, viruses can contain other things like spyware. Spyware programs that hide in the background spying on what you do. And then generally they send that information to somebody, like the keystroke loggers we were talking about earlier. That's what makes something spyware. They're viruses too, because that's how they get to your machine. But then they go farther than that and do something like this. Yes?
I have a program on my machine, AdAware.
Yeah.
Is that good?
That's very good. We'll talk about that shortly.
Okay, thank you.
That's an excellent program.
Hold on.
Somebody, I got you somebody else in here.
How about SpyBot Search and Destroy?
Same thing. We'll talk about it later. This is another great product.
Every time I run pest control, it freaks out on all my AdAware stuff.
Yeah, I'm not that impressed by... Well, the problem with pest control is that other anti-spyware things like AdAware have the spyware signatures in them. Otherwise, how would they know what they're looking for? Pest Patrol doesn't honor some other programs. They want to be exclusive. So even though they know it's AdAware, all they have to do is write a couple lines of code that said, am I in AdAware? They don't even bother to do that. So it'll go crazy every time because AdAware has the signatures so that it knows what to compare it to and search for.
McAfee Stinger, I went on yesterday. May 2nd is...
That question we get all the time. And in fact, there's a line about it on the Security Tango. For those of you who have been there recently.
They only update Stinger when a virus comes out that's going to disable McAfee, Norton, AVG, Antivirus, any of your antivirus programs. Otherwise, there's no need to do any updates.
Right, because Stinger is not a general-purpose virus program. It only hits about 40 or 50. And if there's no new ones, it doesn't
and
update.
And it's a small token out of 182,000 viruses.
Pardon? There you go. There's a new one yesterday.
Thank you.
So there you are.
Somebody over there.
Yes. Okay, excellent.
I got a question about Stinger, though.
Yes.
Going back to the original spelling, which I understand they went away from because one of the worms was...
Right. The question is, and I should be repeating these questions, I apologize. The question is, they've gone back to the original spelling of Stinger. They had changed the spelling because there was a worm that specifically attacked Stinger. What they've also done is hardened Stinger against that attack. So they can go back to the original name. I can just imagine them getting all, like, really aggravated that they had to change the name, you know, and working hard to get it back. Spyware, we've already talked about stuff that goes on in the background. A Trojan is some form of program that pretends to be something else. It doesn't hide. It wants to be something. One of the earliest was a program called Elf Bowling, which was a little flash program of elves bowling.
I love that.
Yeah, except it was a Trojan horse. It loaded spyware on your machine every time it worked. And that's what it does. You say something that's funny or interesting or cute or dirty or whatever they think their target audience is going to be. Or actually all of those, they'll put out, you know, out 100 versions. And while you're looking at the picture, running the little cute program, it's doing stuff on your hard drive.
Sometimes there isn't ever a cute picture or cute program. It's
right.
Just masquerading as one. So you open it up, nothing happens, you think, oh, okay, it didn't work. And you
bad download, right.
Yeah, but it's already run and it's already done something and it's too late.
Right. Malware, you'll hear this term a lot. Basically, that's all this stuff. It just means...
Malicious
some bad
software.
Thing. From the Latin, bad.
Computer people are lazy. We like to shorten everything we can.
Right.
Some people, if you remember the DOS days, DOS had 3-character commands. Unix has 2-character commands. And we had to have at least 2 characters in a command because a 1-character command only gives you 26 commands.
Right.
So right. Malware, we don't like saying malicious software. It's, you know, too long and we're too lazy, so malware.
Right. Script kiddies, we talked a little bit about that. There's 2 levels of virus writers. There are the real virus writers who create real viruses. They then create scripts so that anybody can take their script, add something else to it, and make a new virus. You know, they figure out the real exploit, how to get through the hole or whatever, and then they get they create a script so that anybody can add to it and just use their basic code. The people who grab those scripts to run them are called script kiddies. And that's an extremely pejorative term. It, If you're a script kiddie, you're actually lower than worm belly. It's you're nothing. Calling a virus writer a script kiddie is determined to get you a sock in the puss. So I always call them script kiddies. Phishing, this is a new thing, email fraud, where somebody sends out an email, it looks legitimate, it looks like it comes from a well-known, trustworthy place, and it says, okay, I get like 100 of these an hour, your PayPal account.
Yeah.
You know, there's a problem with your PayPal account. Well, up until about 6 months ago, I didn't even have a PayPal account. So I figured whatever problem I had wasn't really mine. But I get those all the time, and I just throw them away. PayPal doesn't send out emails if you have a problem.
I'm getting one right now. It says, because I've got one account that we use for folks to fill out forms to let us know if they want to order a system, and the email address is sales@nypc.com. Well, I've been getting these notices from McAfee. The admin person at nypc.com is shutting down the sales account because it's containing viruses. Now, there's only one problem. I'm the administrator for NYPC management. I create the account.
And while Dave has a lot of problems, he doesn't send himself email. That we know of.
Yeah. The support team at Jesse Group wanted you to download this file. No, I didn't.
Yeah, right. So they're everywhere, and there's lots. That's social engineering, and there's lots of them going on.
PayPal, at will send you an email if you're approaching $2,000 limit and insist that you give them your routing number for your checking account.
But they always tell you to go to PayPal and log into PayPal directly.
Right.
They don't say click here.
There's
in
no
email.
Link. If they give you a link, it's not PayPal.
Because what phishers do, here's another slick thing phishers will do. They put that link in there, and you click to it, and you go to this web page. Most folks don't look at the address up above. They look at the actual screen. What they have done is say they went to HSBC. They're directing to go to HSBC. What these phishers have done is they've stolen all the artwork and put it on their webpage. So it looks as official as all get out. They can have the watermark in the background. They can have the HSBC logo and everything else because it's just a click, copy, paste. Click, copy, paste.
And those are the better phishers. There's a lot of phishers that spell eBay wrong. And that's your first clue.
Yeah.
There's your sign.
I had an email about two weeks ago. Please come here, put your route number, all that stuff. Or, since somebody tried to charge you $146 in your account, we need to verify so we can cancel it. So I called PayPal, and they told me it's totally baloney. And they told me that if the PayPal ever sends an email, it will have your full name in it.
Right.
Otherwise, your name doesn't show up in it. So
right, right.
A lot of the way the phishers work is they'll grab the first part of your email address. So when you set up your email account, you put in your first name, last name. So they can see that in your email signature. So I'll get messages, hi, Steve, how you doing? Because I've got Steve as the first name set up in my email account. So they look at stuff like that. So the biggest thing with any of those, if you have a PayPal account or Citibank account or any of these big businesses are getting targeted, you don't click the link in the message. You go to their website directly with your browser. And there'll be notices there if it's a legitimate message.
One thing I always used to do when I was in the pre-computer days, if I wrote away for anything, I'd put an apartment number. I own a house, okay? I actually live in an apartment in my house. I have partial use of one room, the rest belongs to my wife, but it doesn't actually have an apartment number associated with it. So I could track who they'd sold that number to. I do the same thing when I sign up for stuff over the web. I use different spellings of my name. I use different email addresses. Because I own my own website, asknick.com, asknick.com, I can put pretty much anything I want in there, which is one of the reasons I get so freaking much spam. I can put anything I want in there and get email back, and it comes to me, any name I want. So I'll, like, when I signed up for Information Week, magazine. The email address I used was iweek@asknick.com. If somebody else sends me something at that email address, I know they sold it. Now, you can't necessarily use that, but you can use something like it. Spell your name differently.
Not your email address, because that's defined by your ISP.
Right, that's got to be the same.
But your first name or last name in the setup of your email account.
Or what I do is I use a different middle initial.
Right.
You can always change, because it won't look funny, but you can start with, you know, I can sit there and use David A.
There's also, hold on a second, there's also, those of you who are lucky enough to be Frontier DSL customers, you can get, what, 8 email addresses? And so you can set one up as like a honeypot. You know, use that one as the one that you sign up for stuff for. And then you can see what comes to that and whether any of it is illegitimate, and then you'll know. Yeah.
I just write the, put the name of the thing that I'm asking for, and they haven't stopped it.
Right. Exactly.
So you don't have to figure out what the code is.
Right. So, yes.
Just that
You're manually trying to update it?
Yeah, you shouldn't download McAfee from AOL. You should download McAfee from McAfee.
Well, AOL
When you try to forcibly, in other words, you want to go manually and try to update it?
I right click on the taskbar icon.
Yeah, and then you say check for updates?
Right.
Yes, it will take you to a screen, and that's why you have to put in your email address and the password that you signed up. Because with McAfee 8 and 9 now, they require you to put in a user, an email address and a password. And yes, if you're manually trying to update McAfee, it will require you to put in your email address and password. So write that down, folks, if you're installing McAfee, or, you know, if you're going from an older version to a new one, because if you hear something you want a quick check to see if there's something there, the easier way to do it is just change McAfee. It should be in the schedule task bar to run every day at a certain time.
Right, and then it'll run by itself. You don't have to do that.
Right.
Yeah.
Just let that do it.
Yeah, to manually go in, it wants the account you created when you bought the program so that they can tell you when you have to buy the update to the program.
Right. Anyway, the point here is that you get a million of these things. And it's, you can no longer trust an email message. If you get an email message that purports to be from your best friend, and here's a great little, you know, run this cute program or this very cute video clip or whatever, you know what they say, trust but verify. Farming, this is brand new. This happens mostly to people who have web servers. Somebody breaks into the server and sets up code so that if you go to a legitimate website, it automatically and immediately moves you to another website, which isn't legitimate but looks identical. So now, not only do you have to worry about your email, but now you have to worry when you go to a website, check that address bar to make sure you're where you think you are. You can in Internet Explorer, but you folks are way too smart to be using Internet Explorer anymore. So we don't care. Okay. Keystroke loggers, we've already talked to me. Ah, yes.
Didn't something like that happen on the sound bites where, like, the Russian sites came in and then they sent us off to a different, it took you guys a couple of days to get rid of that?
Oh, there was some guy who, yeah.
He was in the message area. And, him and I, for one day and a half, were going head-to-head. Because I even emailed them back and said, if you think your posting is going to last, I said, forget it, because as fast as you put them in, I'm eliminating
that. That was entirely my fault. I actually was out of town for the weekend, and an exploit hit. I didn't get to it for a couple of days. And he was in before I got back. And that is entirely matter of timing. We blocked him out. That's slightly different, but similar, yes.
Before you block Facebook bloggers, is there any benefit to using cut-and-paste to fill in
If it's a logger that only looks at your keystrokes, yes. Almost all of them also check your clipboard.
Well, there's another good one, though, that I've been using. There was one for a while. It was called Gator. It'll fill out forms. Forget that one. There's one called RoboForm, and that one is encrypted. So when it, you know, pops up and fills in a form, it's actually in an encrypted file. So, but it'll fill out your information in a form. And they, the security on that is very good. You even have to, before you fill out the form, it pops up and says, well, what's your password? And you got to type in your password, and then it'll open it up, and then you can start filling out forms. And it's secure. And it's free.
Google.
In this farming, if you have a website that is passive, but there's no interaction with the user on the website, can they still farm?
Yeah, absolutely. Because what they do is they replace your code with a little bit of JavaScript, sends them to the next place. And when they get there, JavaScript in the background downloads a worm or a virus or its keystroke logger, but you still see a passive page that looks just like yours. So just because you made the site passive doesn't mean the site is passive.
There's always something that downloads from the website you go to, downloads the text. You may have no links, you may have no pictures, but it downloads that text to begin with.
Right, and you can put anything in there.
I didn't get the name of that form.
RoboForm. Yeah, if you go to...
R-O-B-O form.
Yeah. You go to Google and do a search for R-O-B-O form. You'll find it. It's a free download, and it's a great utility. If you got a note.
On that the form thing, Google has one on the toolbar.
Google toolbar, I'm sorry to say, though, folks, also has a lot of spyware in there, too.
How about I use the auto form?
Yeah, the most web browsers have their own autofill built in that reads your name and address and remembers form things you filled out, and that fills it out for you. Okay. Keystroke loggers will still catch that, yeah, but it adds to the convenience of being able to, you know, you just type a couple of letters and it fills out your whole email address.
Does it make it difficult?
There you go.
It doesn't take much of you.
Not much. Again, if it hits the clipboard, they own you.
Oh, that's yours.
I'm sorry, I can't hear him while you're doing that. I don't know. I've never played with it.
With what?
RoboForm.
Yeah, I've used it. No, it doesn't have spyware. I've been using it, I'm on the second or third edition, and I was using this other product, Gator. For the longest time.
Yeah, you don't want to use Gator.
Until Gator turned out to be only spyware.
Yeah,
nothing but
this spyware. RoboForm, like I say, it's secure. You know, it's secure in that even to start to fill out a form, it'll first ask you for the password. You gotta set up a password to set up the accounts, and like you're saying, you can set up to 10 different.
Can't you do a setting that won't allow a password?
No, many of these systems have their own email senders built into them. So it doesn't matter what you do, they're doing it on their own.
You got another question over there.
You're going to be covering how to know when you have a keystroke logger on there?
We're going to talk about how to check everything.
Oh, yeah.
This is part of cleaning your system, which is next. We're going to talk about what's involved in doing it and how often you do it, how hard it is, and how you actually do it.
Yeah, we've only done 40 minutes. We've still got a long way.
We got hours yet. Sit back, relax.
Evidently, you've never been to a show. We never have problems of running out of topics to talk about.
We know it seemed like hours, but it's only been 40 minutes.
Yeah. Albert Einstein once was asked, can he explain the theory of relativity very quickly? And he said, a minute kissing a beautiful woman is a lot shorter than a minute sitting on a hot stove. There you are. So it's only been 40 minutes, but you might want to move over to another burner because we're moving on. We'll talk about hardware first and software. This is actual physical cleaning. Mr. Enright?
Yep. A lot of you folks, you wonder, do your machines get dirty? Right there is one.
You may not even have considered the fact that your machines could get dirty.
What you have to remember.
It's all dust and stuff there.
Yeah, we're trying to figure out what model computer that was. Because it's got a big riser card on the back. Cause yeah. The motherboard's on the bottom.
That is a Compaq. Very good friend of mine, computer. As you can see, the dirt gets sucked into the front. You got to remember, these computers, when they're down on the floor, they're like huge vacuum cleaners. Because they're literally, on the back, you can always feel the air being blown out. And on the newer computers now, they're even putting 6-inch fans, muffin fans, on the front. So it's that much more force driving it through to clear out the, you know, keep the components cool. And usually they have your power supply fan. And then on the back side, oh, that's another one. On the back side here, you'll see over here, is the power supply. And there's a small fan there. On the newer systems now, underneath that, they'll also put either another 3 or 6-inch fan to get the air out. Because of the faster machines, they really have to push the air through there. So that, if you've got a cat, dog, whatever, it's going to suck all that dirt and literally just blow it on these components. And a sheer way to burn something out and overheat it, you let it get like that.
So one of the recommendations are don't set your computer on the floor. If you want to get a tower out of the way, get like a shoebox or something. Do we have shoeboxes anymore?
Yeah.
Get a shoebox or something to lift it up so it's not directly on the floor.
You can
also get under the desk hangers so it hangs from the top of your desk instead of sitting on the
floor. The coolest thing that I've got is one of those little metal shelf unit things. You want to make sure it's a fairly sturdy one because towers are pretty heavy these days. But what makes it nice is I've got my systems on the lower shelf off the floor about a foot, and then on the upper shelf there's my printer, and on the top is paper and stuff like that, so it's all neat. It's the only neat thing in the room, and it's all neat and
or very inexpensive.
Yeah, and above that is the whole coffee pot just in case there's a real disaster and all drips down.
Or one other thing you can do, it'll cost you, I think it's $1.20.
Hey,
$1.20 is you go out and buy yourself a 2x4. And all you do is cut the 2x4 up and a couple nails, you can sit there and make a little crossbar to set it right on top. So this way, you know, especially if your computers are down the basement or anything else, you know, any water damage or anything else, it pop off the floor. Simple little frame box, you can sit there with a couple, or even take the 2x4 and set it on edge with a brace, the T. You can sit there and brace it right up on there. It gets it up off the ground at least 4 inches. It costs you $1.20.
It never hurts you to during your annual spring cleaning, assuming anybody does that anymore, open up your machine. See what it looks like in there and clean it out.
Take a vacuum cleaner. Here's one thing, though. I can't stress this enough. Is if you're going to clean your machine, leave it plugged in, but turn it off.
Leaving it plugged in grounds it so you don't get any static sparks.
So you take that cover off and it's plugged in still, turned off, touch the power supply. That
touch something metal inside the computer.
Power supply is automatically, you know, with the ground, that will ground you. Now you can sit there with a vacuum cleaner and just sort of wave it. Don't get it down in there. I don't want anybody getting shocked, hitting a capacitor or anything else.
And the bristles bristles on a brush will generate static electricity if you're brushing it around inside.
So if you just take the end of the vacuum cleaner and just kind of wave it over there, that'll suck a lot of the dirt. On the newer ones, I got to get some newer pictures. On the size of the fans right now on the new Pentium 4s easily are 3 inches square. And I've had, you know, and they're tall fins. I've had fins as tall, you know, this tall up to this tall for the heat that these units put out now. And I've had some that are literally packed solid with dirt.
And there's no point in buying, you know, a couple of $1,000 worth of computer and then losing it because you didn't clean it out once in a while.
Because one of the sad facts is, even though we're, you know, the machines are getting faster, the bearings in that and those drives will dry out pretty fast. And it will seize up. Most of the systems now, you will get a warning and, you know, let you know that it is overheating.
Is it okay to use one of those, like, aerosol cans you buy?
Here's the thing, with those aerosol cans,
if you hold it too close, it freezes.
It can freeze, and it can also, you know, because of that freezing, it can also get water.
Because
I had one person literally get right in there, and It was so cold so fast, it shorted out the board.
Also, a lot of the aerosol cans have a flammable propellant in it. I got a really cool flame shooting out of actually a projector that we blew out before it had cooled off completely.
And there's the fact that you blow all that dust out, where does it go?
Right back
into the air to be sucked back in when you turn the machine on.
I like to use a little shop vac, and so I'll blow the dust out and then turn the vac around so it's sucking it in.
Okay, but that's Steve. The rest of us should really use a technique that will work.
What I do at my shop is literally I have this compressor on a stand that we wheel outside, and in the compressor I have two inline filters. Because if you just try to use a regular compressor, there's moisture in that line. So I have two inline filters that I can sit there at the end of each time I blow a machine out and sit there and drain the water out. But I've had machines like that. My new neighbor, I think I scared the heck out of him the first time I was doing this. We had one come in, and the thing was just packed. I mean, I opened it up, and there's the cobwebs coming off the side of it, and I looked at it. Couldn't see any of the components. The black fan, we knew it was in there because we could see the screws that held the fan on. That was just all covered over. We wheeled it outside. My neighbor's out there, and I just got to know him maybe a week or so. I'm sitting there talking to him, and I'm blowing this out, and all this dust is going his way.
So now he's got to wash his windows.
You're right. Now he's thinking, can we get this guy out?
Of dirt and everything else coming out of it. And people don't realize that something like that can happen within, you know, depending on the house environment, 6-8 months.
Yeah. So, in particular, if you have animals.
Yeah.
Worse if you're a smoker. I know many fewer of us are, but if you're a smoker, you probably don't want to open your machine because then you really actually see what's happening in your lungs. It coats it. It just literally puts a film over it,
and
you can't suck that
it's
out.
It's a very sticky film. You can't suck out.
No, yeah. That literally kills.
Yeah, you're done.
CD-ROM drive, because again, the air is being sucked in through those.
Any open space, and there's an open space.
Floppy drives for the folks that still have those, and on the fans again, just the fan unit. It just builds up a tar that you got to throw it away. You got to throw the fan away. You can't clean it. Yeah. It gets into the bearings. Like I say, it used to be sealed bearings. Now they're not anymore because they're making them so cheap. And they get in there and it just gums it up and overheats the machine and there you go.
For those of you who are still smokers, whatever you do in the rest of your house and in the rest of your body, I don't care. But in the computer room, have a little pity on your machine. Get yourself, at the very least, if you're going to smoke in the computer room, get one of those ashtrays that has a little air filter sucker thing on them. Make a sentence out of that. That's the thing you need so that when you put the cigarette down, all the air goes into that filter as opposed to in the filter of your machine. That is your machine. So definitely do that, or try not to smoke in the computer room. Which means for many of you would be, hello, how... Be right back. Be right back.
I had a friend who smoked. Their spouse got cancer, wouldn't quit smoking. The cat got cancer. They quit immediately.
Not worse. All right, let's move on to software. We'll talk about how to find the bad stuff, how to get rid of it, and how to be responsible from the future. The first question I always get is, how often do I have to do this? Well, here are the questions you need to ask yourself, because these are the places that you get this stuff.
You're blocking the question.
I don't care. Sorry.
We were reading your
answer. Thank you. Here you are. I had them tattooed. These are the questions. Well, that's why I brought this. These are the questions here, and that's the important thing. That's where they come from. So as often as you get, as you are on the internet, as often as you read your email, that's how often the possibility exists that you will get this stuff. And it doesn't matter how you connect to the internet or who your internet service provider is or any of that stuff. These things get to you, and so you really need to do this sort of thing fairly regularly. Now that you know that you have to do it all the dang time, how hard is it to do? Not very. It's tedious. It takes a while, but it's not hard.
Click a button, come back in an hour.
Right, click a button, watch an entire Thin Man movie, come back. How do you do it? It's real simple. Just dance the security tango. We've talked about this only about a zillion times. The Security Tango at securitytango.com, sponsored by Frontier. Ding.
We got to get a bell.
We need a bell.
No, we need tango music.
Yeah. This is the Security Tango, and it's real simple. We talk about what the Security Tango is, how to dance the tango. We give you all the steps. Here's the other cool thing. On the CD, the first, I want to apologize, I don't know, I didn't even count at the house, but the first 100 of you got a CD. Everybody? Oh, everybody got, okay, I'm not apologizing to anybody for that. Never apologize, I should have learned that. Everybody's got a CD today. On that CD, you just put it in the machine, and it's a Windows machine, it'll automatically start running. They're holding up your CDs. I trust you, you got it. Okay. And it will run a special front page that leads you to do all this. And there's a Security Tango page. It's actually on the machine. Most of the latest versions of the software are on that. Stinger, as you just heard, updated this morning or last night. I'm sorry. It doesn't update in 3 months. I burn a CD and they update. Thank you.
One big caveat about the CD. If you have a slot-loading CD player,
right,
where you just stick the disc in the slot, do not use these discs.
Right.
You cannot use odd-sized discs or odd-shaped discs in a slot-loading player. It will most likely destroy the player.
Right. So
you must
have
a tray that opens up and set the disc in.
And you'll notice in your tray, there's a little center depression a little lower than the rest of it. That's not for your coffee cup. It's for this size CD. But you can always go to securitytango.com, which links you to all the real places.
Question, yes?
I'm sorry, I cannot hear the question. It's not terribly easy. In terms of...
Well, the question is that the steps can be very difficult, and unfortunately, that's the way it is. Right.
No, when I say it's not hard compared to, like, I don't know, doing a brain surgery. The problem with the Security Tango is that you do need a certain level of expertise because the virus writers are really good now. It used to be, you know, here's run this one program, wait 4 minutes, you're done. It doesn't work that way anymore. There's a million places that viruses can hide. There's a million different viruses, and so it becomes more complex. The good news is, you don't have to do it yourself. You can bring it to these guys, and they will do it for you.
For a fee.
For a fee.
Yeah, there's...
we all got to earn a living.
Yeah.
In our shop nowadays, there's not a machine that leaves our shop without Adware and SpyBot on it. I do not even touch a machine, do anything else. They could sit there and say, well, this program is acting funny or anything else. The first thing I'll always do, and I'm sure Steve does the same thing, is we check to make sure the antivirus software is updated. I run Adware and SpyBot on both.
So most of the causes of other problems are because of spyware. So you clean the spyware off, you're going to probably fix what their problem was to begin with.
And with that, then we give them this list, and I apologize, my wife was redoing the one, so we didn't get it printed off. But you can go...
She's on the list.
Yeah, she's on the list there that if you go and email my wife, Lori Lynch at NYPC.com, she sends you this step-by-step procedure on how to run Adware and SpyBot weekly. And the cool thing of it is, she wrote it. So it's all in user-friendly terms. When she was developing this list, she had me sit there and say, okay, what do I do? What do I do next? What do I do next? And she wrote it in her terms.
Translating from computer speak into...
Yes,
into human
my shortcut. I'll sit there. Well, I meant that. I didn't know that. Okay, then.
I can't believe how many times I have to tell my wife to click the OK button. Box comes up. What does it say? Do you want to print?
Email her.
Click the OK button.
She will send that to you. You print it off, and it's a step-by-step procedure. So going back to your original question of, you know, it being difficult, yes, it might be the first time, but after you do it, running this sheet once a week is not that hard.
That's why bringing it to these guys to get it done initially is a great idea. Then bring the sheet home, and you can do it yourself.
Yeah.
The only problem that I found is that you have to download Stinger
I think I fixed that a while ago. Yeah, once you go into safe mode, step two is download all the files, and step three is going into safe mode. So I fixed that. Actually, that was kind of a while ago. So step two is download the file, step three is going to safe mode. You're absolutely right. The original one did it all backwards. It's not like I paid any attention.
Way in the far back.
Oh, in the back he was waiting first. I apologize.
One of the steps is delete the temp file.
Yep.
And it won't let me delete the temp file because it says it's been used by a program.
Some will be.
Yes. If you have some programs
running, I
thought
I mentioned that in here.
You will not be able to run. Especially, say, if I'm running Stinger, or I got a program started. I haven't actually clicked to tell it to go yet, but it's open.
I have nothing open.
It doesn't.
Well, you may have nothing open, but Windows has 100 programs open itself.
Yeah, if you've got things down the taskbar, they're open. But don't worry about it. As long as, if you see those temp files... Yeah, no, but if you see those temp files, when you go to delete it, and it's maybe got three or four, and it's today's date, that's okay.
If it's and if it is a malware, it'll be killed in the next step. So that's not really a problem. The idea behind killing the temp files is the main reason is, in the next steps, you're going to be running software that checks every single file. There's really no need to check a temp file that's 2 years old. Get rid of it before you do the next step. That way you don't have, it's a shorter process.
And that's sort of a shortcoming in Windows itself. You set how long to keep temp files by how much space you allocate on your hard drive. By default, Windows allocates like 10%. So
and when you only had, like, you know, 300 meg drives, 200 meg drives, or rather half a meg drives,
yeah.
512K drives,
yeah, yeah.
That was reasonable.
So now it's allocating 10 megabytes up to gigabytes.
25 megabytes.
Of temp space.
25 gigabytes.
The whole, and that goes back to the idea of a temp file is that when you go to a website, it downloads everything on that website into your temp directory. If you go back to the same website, it looks in your temp directory. It doesn't have to download it again. Back when we were all on 300 baud modems, anyone remember 300 baud modems? That saved a lot of time. Now that, you know, even 56K modems, Frontier DSL, cut your temp files down to 1 meg, as small as it can be. Because eventually it takes longer to search the temp files than it would to just download it again in the first place.
Right.
So in that,
right. If you're on something like DSL, you don't need as much temp space. I don't know if I'd go down to 1 meg, but you don't need as much.
Okay, that
modem, though, almost caused me a divorce.
I know.
Yeah, I know. But so, sort of as a corollary to that, though, Windows just doesn't do a very good job of deleting the temp files that you've told it to delete. So you say 1 meg of temp files, it'll go bigger than that, and then you got to delete them manually anyway.
So how do you go in and...
Well, you go to Dave's Tips, and I got a thing right there that tells you how
there
to get
it is.
Rid of
yep. Internet properties, and there's
how to get rid of
temp
files.
Okay.
Hold on one moment.
Yep.
We got this gentleman back there.
You said you wasn't
yes. Right at the bottom of the security Tango. Right at the bottom.
It's on the page that's on your... It's on the actual Tango page on your thing, and it's also... Here's at the Soundbites website. That's soundbites.org. Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Dave's, thank you. Dave's tips are right here on the front page, and one of them is how to get rid of all that stuff. On the Security Tango page, hello, hi. I stole this machine from work. I just grabbed it and ran out the door, so the keyboard is all different for me, and everything's in the wrong place. It's just
right
a pain in the neck.
Right at the bottom is her email address. I guarantee you that if you email her within 24 hours, you will have it.
If you click the Let's Dance button, it leads you through the whole process. At the very bottom of that page, that would be the end key, the very last step is email Lori Lynch, and there's a link to her email address. Click it, it'll go to your email program, and
tell her you want the,
there you go.
The checklist, and she'll email it right out to you. It's in Word format, print it out, and follow those steps, and I guarantee it. And the other thing is, and she's been doing this for a while, if you see anything you'd like to change, she's done many revisions on it due to people's feedback. But the thing that is, though, folks, it's only instructions on how to run Adware and SpyBot. It's not on how to do the whole Tango.
Right, there's a step in the Tango that says run Adware, and that's about all it says. So Lori's instructions say here's how to run Adware.
Right. Right.
She won't teach you how to download. She's gotten those requests too.
Right.
She's an end user.
Right. But I have to be, before we move on, I have to go back to his 300 baud modem story. I was like the first guy I knew who had a 1200 baud modem, four times faster. People literally came to my house to watch me run stuff, four times faster. Which, of course, if you go with for the DSL thing, now you're five times faster than dial-up, and it's unbelievably fast. You'd be amazed at the difference. Go ahead. Yes, sir.
I don't know if this is related to anything. For some reason, I have two email accounts, one near the Roadrunner, and I use Yahoo with my friend. I never use Roadrunner. But I have to keep going back there every once in a while to clean it out because...
What happens is so many of these people just... when they write a worm or a virus, they create, you know, they know that roadrunner.r.com or frontiernet.com or whatever is an ISP, an internet service provider. They just then run through a list of first names, of random characters.
A at frontiernet.com.
And you get hit.
B at frontiernet.com. C at frontiernet. It's very, very easy to send a million messages.
About a year ago it started, Egyptian characters sending emails on
Russia, Chinese is very common, Japanese.
More and more, now 90% of all emails sent are this.
90% of viruses are coming out of China. People are being paid to write keystroke loggers and fishing things and farming things, and that's what you're getting. People are actually being paid to do this, and that they're being paid in China.
See, there's a scam on right now. And that's why we can't stress enough about the phishing and the key loggers. The police organization that I work with just uncovered this one group of folks that were selling wallets. They sit there and say,
"Wallet?
What's the big deal out of that?" Well, for a certain fee, you could go up to this door, knock on the door, give them some money, he gives you this wallet.
Full of credit cards and money. And
you look it open, yeah, it's got three brand new credit cards, it's got a driver's license, and a social security card. You've already requested this, they set it all up for you, you give them cash. Now you can turn around with those three credit cards, that are tied to somebody else's account.
But you don't care.
You don't care. And run them up. You can sit there and open up other credit applications because you've got a social security card and you got a driver's license.
And then they can't be arrested for email fraud because their email says they're selling wallets, which they are.
Right.
And they just uncovered this scam because of these folks sitting there doing this phishing and stealing information from folks. Literally, identity theft is becoming a bigger problem on the internet right now than viruses ever thought of being. Viruses used to be our biggest fear. Oh, it's going to wipe out my whole hard drive. Forget that, folks. That's
there's no money in viruses.
The idiot, what we used to refer to as idiots that write viruses, no lie. Well, now all of a sudden they've wised up, and instead of writing the viruses, they're getting in on this phishing scam.
Everybody's an entrepreneur
now. And key logging. Because, wait a minute, they can actually make money. It's illegal, but they make money. I have a very close friend, because they just uncovered a big scam at Citibank. Where one bank, they literally went through the office and cleaned out a lot of the employees. Why? Because they were selling personal information. And they uncovered this big ring of folks that had their identity theft. A very good friend of mine had hers identity theft. That she had literally somebody trying to fill out other credit applications and getting credit cards sent to another address somewhere else in the city. And she had somebody else order checks in Cleveland, Ohio.
Yeah, you send Citibank a change of address request. Send my bill and my new credit card to this address instead. I moved. And They'll do it.
Because you got the legitimate information.
Shred your garbage. Dumpster diving is real big, too. A lot of this stuff, identity theft and things, aren't new. They're just new to computers, and it's a lot easier to do.
No, actually, it isn't. You can get... if you really want to steal somebody's identity, buy yourself a pair of Playtex gloves and go behind any restaurant in town about 3 o'clock in the morning and go through the dumpster. I'll guarantee you, you get a whole lot more names a whole lot faster than setting up one of these things.
Yep. See, a lot of people ask us that, about buying stuff on the internet. Well, isn't it dangerous to put your credit card number on the internet?
Thanks.
Not as dangerous as handing your credit card to a waiter who disappears with it for half an hour. Who knows what they're doing? But most of the time, it's legitimate, you know, business and whatnot. But every now and then, you'll find someone that's back in the corner making copies of credit cards.
How many times have you been at a restaurant and a whole other waiter comes up and takes your credit card? Did you ever even just stop and think,
Who's
generally
that?
Not.
You gentlemen do your banking online?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. No.
Well, he's an old curmudgeon. I'm old, but I'm way past curmudgeon.
No, he asked if I do it. My wife, I don't know what she does. I'm not allowed to check her.
Yeah, I do my banking online.
So you feel comfortable?
Yes, I do. And that's because every single time I go online, I check and double check and triple check that I'm at the right place.
Look at that little lock padlock icon, and that shows you're on a secure site.
And I don't use Internet Explorer. Right. I can now. Yes. And so I do. You're right. I didn't until they made it, because it was Internet Explorer only.
Why not Internet Explorer?
Because Internet Explorer, I want to be very careful here. There's two reasons. One of them is incompetent programmers. But the real reason, the bigger reason,
really
is because there are so many people using Internet Explorer, it's just a huge target.
And it ties so deeply into the operating system. You can go to a web page. That web page will download a file to your computer, install it in your computer, run it in your computer, and start doing stuff without telling you, without you knowing, without you noticing.
Well, because Microsoft does that themselves, and they've broken Microsoft's code. If you do it in Firefox, it will ask you every single time, do you want to run this?
A very good example is I have a friend out in Webster. He's a tailor out there. And he's from Turkey. And he goes to this web page over there because he wants to read about the local stuff going on in his hometown. Well, one of his, because he's still got a lot of family there, one of his family members was gotten an award. So he wanted to show this award to his granddaughter. So here the gentleman sitting there, and he had already pulled the article up. He has this direct link to this Turkish newspaper. So he goes to sit his daughter on his lap, and he goes to pull up this article because he wanted to show her some of her ancestors over there, and he got this big award. He pulls it up.
The video cable isn't any longer.
10 seconds later, after it just started coming up, 25, and this is no exaggeration, 25 porn sites pop up. Boom, 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 boom. In less than a day, the site had been hacked, and it's in paper. 25 porn sites started. He's sitting there trying to get her turned around. He's trying to click one off. 25 more open. He had to literally set her down and pull the plug.
Whereas under Firefox, if I go under Tools and Options, I can go into Web Features and say Block Pop-Up Windows. I can even say certain sites are allowed to open up windows.
Not in Internet.
So, for example, if I go to CNN and I know that they pop stuff up and I want to see it, now 90% of the time it's ads, so I wouldn't do that if I were you. I'm not advocating it. I'm just saying. If I want to see the ads on CNN, I can put CNN in there and it'll do it for me. I can also say allow websites to install software, but I'm only allowing Mozilla to install software. So if I want an add-on for Mozilla, I don't know how many of you can see the bottom of the screen here. Hold on a second. Let me make this smaller and let you see. Firefox, Mozilla is the company, Firefox is the browser. And I apologize for using them interchangeably. Firefox is the browser. You get it at mozilla.org.
And
I don't
extra,
know who asked that question.
Well, extra confusing, Mozilla is also a browser.
Well, but not anymore.
Oh, they've
they're pretty much, they don't care much anymore.
Some people liked a program like Netscape, where you get your mail and your web in one big program. Microsoft went with Internet Explorer for web, Outlook Express for mail, so two separate programs. So because a lot of people were used to that, Mozilla, which basically spawned, well, Netscape spawned Mozilla, they had Mozilla, the program, with mail and web.
One big monolithic
one program.
Thing.
One big program can run really slow, so they separated it out. Mozilla Firefox is the web browser. Mozilla Thunderbird is the email program. So Firefox is like Internet Explorer,
right,
except more secure and less risky.
I have add-ons for this. For example, I have a weather thing. It tells me it's sunny in Rochester, and tomorrow it's going to do this, and the day after that it's going to do that. And
do not install WeatherBug.
Glenn
is
won't
a
have
horrible
to do his
firmware.
Job.
Right. well, I'm just giving... Yeah, right.
Gotta change.
Yeah, and I can get a radar thing there. Not nearly as accurate, of course.
As
Channel 13, but it's there.
I got a question for you. I use a secondary email address that I have any site that I go to. I use a Mozilla. I subscribe to Norton Security Software.
Sure.
It's a new system that we're just building. I've used the Tango before. Am I wasting my money with Norton?
Absolutely not.
No.
Norton is, you need five different types of security programs. Antivirus, anti-spyware, firewall, anti-spam, and pop-up blocker. And there's no one package that does it all.
And that's why there's a Tango for each step is one of those things. So
because if you don't have a physical hardware firewall, then we recommend, you can get it with the Norton Internet Security, McAfee has it, or one that we personally like is ZoneAlarm, and it's free. You have to have a firewall if you're on DSL or any of the other high speed.
Well,
you're
even on dial-up.
Isn't that prevention from...
Yes. The point of a firewall is to block traffic from getting into or out of your computer that you don't know about. So you tell your firewall to allow web traffic. You tell your firewall to allow programs to get to the Internet.
When you have a program like McAfee or Norton, you have to go in and set it by hand. One of the nice things about ZoneAlarm is the first time any program runs, it says, whoa, this program is trying to get to the Internet, yes or no? And then you can say, remember this. So, for example, there are programs that I only let go to the Internet when I start them, and I never say, remember this. Others, like my web browser and all of those things, it came up the first time I said, yes, and remember this. It's okay if my web browser or my email program accesses the Internet. And so that's what's nice about a product like ZoneAlarm. It will ask you. And so it's a pain in the neck the first time you run any program. And, in fact, the first day you install it, you're thinking, this was a mistake. But once all of your programs have accessed it and you said yay or nay and remember this, you're done.
And then when it pops up with a program you don't know, you either look it up somewhere, ask someone, or say deny until you find out what that program was.
Right. A follow-up question.
I run Suppress Patrol something like that. I run a hijack program. I run them all. But my daughter has BearShare.
Give up.
And
for real, give up.
BearShare, LimeWire, Kaza, 99% of it is illegal, the rest of it is spyware.
Give up. I'm not joking, give up. Because if you're going to run those things, every single time they run them, they will reinfect your machine.
No, tell you what, here's what you do. You give them that computer, you go out and get yourself your own computer, and you password protect it.
Now or you do what I did. I gave my daughter her own machine. It runs Linux. She can do anything she wants. It's not going to harm anything.
Right.
She's happy with the pig and mud. It works great. Oh, that's right. You wanted to bring it to you.
Yeah.
Let them run Windows.
No. You let them run that machine. You tell them if they mess it up, you bring it to me, and they get to pay the bill.
Right. So at the bottom.
Yep. Oh, I'm Dave Enright. I run a company called Enright PC Management. We're on 70 Empire Boulevard. And this is basically, seriously, I've had to do this to some clients. I've got business cards up here if anybody wants them. But because of all this, it generates a lot of work for both Steve and I. And I had this one lady, she was literally getting to her wit's end because she's trying to run a business. And then she was letting her kids do the same thing, run Kazaa. Another one was on BearShare. And they were doing, surfing the web, IME. And it kept messing up the machine. She'd bring back, I thought you'd fix this. I said, yeah, and you got to go through the checklist. Well, I tell the kids to do that. Damn right.
Doesn't happen.
Tell a 13, 14-year-old.
Yeah, the bottom line is that if you want to protect yourself on the Internet, don't run Windows.
It's
run
just
Macintosh,
like if you,
run Unix.
It's just like if you said to me every week I get my car fixed, the next week I got another dent in it. Well, what happened during the week? Well, my kid took it out. Well, guess what? There's nothing we can do to fix that. If you're going to let your kid drive the car into a wall, you're going to have to get it fixed again. If you're going to let your kid run BearShare, and I don't know how old your kids are, but you're the dad. If you're going to let your kids run BearShare, they're going to reinfect the system. Get over it. It's going to happen. Deal with it. There's no fix for that. Congratulations.
Hey, hear that? Take it.
What operating system are you running?
ME.
XP, ME?
Wow.
Okay, wait.
What business for you? What business for Dave, yeah.
Okay, it's probably not the best thing to run two at once. Get rid of the other one, just unplug the modem, and just run the cable, the DSL modem. If you take Dave's number, he'll put XP on it for you. Windows ME has a couple of problems. One, it exists. It's right. One problem is that Microsoft has stopped supporting it. Not that they ever supported it well, but they stopped supporting it like 2 years ago. So you don't get good updates to anything, and you don't even get good security updates anymore. It truly is time to move on. If you're not running Windows XP Home,
at least.
Well, you don't need Pro if you're just running a home network. The only advantage for most users for XP Pro is that it lets you connect to a Windows 2000 or 2003 server. So if you have a server in your home, then you need Pro.
Pure file sharing is fine if you just have two computers sharing files.
Right, but if you want to go to a server, if you want to be on a Windows network, and you have a real live, real network at home, then you need Pro.
ME,
if you have a real live, real network at home, you already know that. You don't need us to tell you.
ME was rushed to market because no one was buying 2000, so they didn't put much effort into making it because they knew XP was coming.
And nobody bothered to take the time to even write any drivers for it.
Right.
So if you even, Microsoft's answer was, if something didn't work, well, try the Windows 98 driver. Because the companies knew 2000 was out there, more folks were going to that. So that even Microsoft didn't support it long enough. And one of the examples I gave that supported this was you could have gone back over to CompUSA at one time. They still had Windows 98 SE upgrade. They had Windows 2000 and then Windows XP. There should have been a spot there for that beloved program that I love, but it was taken off the market.
My real question was,
oh, gee, now we're getting
well, you just gave us a chance to rant, and we want to thank you for that. We don't get enough, clearly.
Then now that I am DSL, I suppose we have all those five things that people are talking about. So, is that it, or does that
yeah, you, and you get all those five things on the Security Tango.
Mm-hmm. Right. And, in fact, they're on that CD that you've got.
And one of the things you can do, if you're not going to bother using the dial-up anymore, what you can do is, and if it's running off the network card they got, what you can do is to save your hassle so it doesn't, you know, go dialing out on you, is you can go into the control panel. You go to start, go into the control panel, and network, the better way to do it.
Internet properties.
The internet properties.
Never dial.
And you go, and you click on the one that says never dial. That way, it'll automatically default to your DSL connection and never do that dial-up. And then you can go ahead and get the Adware, the SpyBot, all the other parts.
And for those of you who want to know where to bring your machines when you need to, we have Enright PC Management and the Jesse Group or MacAv. This is the best coffee in North America.
Yes.
Of course, there's sound bites, and at the top, AskNick.com.
Ding. Where's Rob?
Using a laptop and you travel,
Yeah.
And you should keep the pile up there because some hotels don't have the.
This was a specific question for a specific user. She's got a desktop at home, changing from dial-up to DSL. That's the only time. It's a single recommendation for a single individual.
What
it's not a general thing.
What you can do then is you can.
Yeah, the other option is dial when
network
connection not present.
One of the other options is the next one down is dial if no network connection is found.
Oh, okay.
And then,
or you just stay in hotels that give you free wireless. They're all over the place.
And then there's
Man, I got to tell you, wait, I got to tell you. We went to my wife and my daughter and I went to the Renaissance Festival a couple of weeks ago. She did not tell me that our hotel room would have free wireless. I'm sorry, but it's just wrong on so many levels.
She didn't want you to stay in the hotel.
Well, that's it. No, I would have gone. My family, way more important than computers. Sorry.
All right, we got a gentleman way in the back.
What? My family is more important than computer. I've always said that. Family first.
We got it on tape.
Family first. Computers somewhere down the line.
Blue shirt, way in the back.
Okay, I'm running a SpyBot, but SpyBot is quit working.
You need to update it. Did you update it?
Well, no. It has updated it, but it gets to a certain
version 1.4? Wait a minute. You running version 1.4?
No, I...
1.4 is the latest version.
Yeah.
But it's likely you got infected by some malicious program that's blocking SpyBot.
Did you run Stinger?
Yeah.
That's why the tango is a tango. You dance the steps in order. If you do them out of order, it's not a tango anymore.
It's a box
Stinger and Norton. So no virus goes.
Then another program that I would recommend.
Right, well, you have to run AdAware and SpyBot. They both search differently. And then another one is CW Shredder. There's we talked about the Google toolbars earlier. There's one called Cool Web Search that adds a new little search bar on your Internet Explorer. It's horribly full of spyware. So there's another program out, CW Shredder, specifically for deleting Cool Web Search.
But since you're not running Internet Explorer anymore, right? You don't have to worry about Cool Web Search.
So it's likely you got hit by something that's blocking SpyBot, so you have to use the other programs to remove it.
CW, as in Country Western. Yes, sir. Wait, the guy in the back is actually standing up.
I know you're talking about the Firefox. I've been using Firefox, but I don't know how to find the Firefox. After I get all my profiles in there and all I have, what will compensate navigators not doing the content and have to restart the Firefox? So shut it down, come back off the window, user, default user.
Generally, if you shut that down and restart it, you'll be fine. What operating system are you running?
If something is wrong inside your computer somewhere, that's losing that information.
You need to get someone to check that machine. There's something else wrong somewhere.
Have you done all the updates?
What?
Right. It shouldn't come up, and you should not lose your favorites, and it should not go back to default user.
That happens when you run two files.
If you run a second version of Firefox, it will come up and say that. But if Firefox crashes, it will also come up and say that, and generally a reboot fixes that. But if Firefox doesn't normally crash, so there's something else not right.
Could be.
Well, then follow that, but it still, that's a separate problem.
If you switch to Firefox, can you
can't. Microsoft won't let you.
That's how they won that one lawsuit, because they wanted, companies tried to get them to take it out, and Microsoft had to go to court, Supreme Court, and prove no, it's integrated with it. The operating system will totally crash if that part is taken out.
Just take the icon off the desktop.
Yeah, well, it's still there. It's just because you can't see it doesn't mean it's not still there.
So I got to ask you that question.
I'm sorry. Can you leave the room?
Firefox, how do you make it the default browser instead of Safari?
As an odd occurrence in the Apple operating system, you have to go into the Apple browser Safari, and in Safari preferences, you can tell it to use another browser as your default browser.
Really?
Yeah.
And they said Macs are easy.
It's the same thing in Apple Mail. In the Apple Mail program, you can tell it to use another. There used to be a separate system preference for setting your default programs, and they decided
Apple Mail then will let Thunderbird be the default.
Yeah.
if you go into Apple Mail.
And go into its preferences.
Okay.
Lady back there was
up,
raising her hand.
And I get Safari.
Yep.
Right, right, right. So that'll fix it.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
I'm sorry. I cannot hear you because these people are. My your hearing is very bad. I need you to speak up. That might be true.
Most
it depends on the router.
Most routers have a firewall built in.
Is it a Linksys?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're good.
Because firewall is only one of the five steps.
Firewall is one of the other things. That's in lieu of zone alarm. In other words, for folks that don't have a firewall, in other words, their DSL plugs right into their computer, they don't have a router. So they need zone alarm.
But even with a router, you may want zone alarm. A router will block people from the outside getting into you.
But if something
is already in your computer, it will get out, no problem. So zone alarm stops things from in your computer getting out.
So it doesn't hurt to run to, hold on. Well, not only want to let her, want to send her email, won't let her answer questions. Go ahead, Dave.
Question about the Tango. I know you don't like modifications, but we're in a situation where we absolutely have to have systems stored. Because my husband runs a...
Can't hear you.
Right.
Yeah, we'll repeat it.
We'll repeat it.
So what I'm doing to compensate for that is every weekend when I run the Tango, I shut System Restore down.
Perfect.
Do all my updates.
Perfect.
Bring it down to safe mode.
Perfect.
Run everything clean, bring it up, turn the System Restore back on.
Perfect.
Exactly. That's
perfect.
The way to do it.
Yeah, you're good.
Yeah.
The question was, we recommend turning off System Restore. Her husband needs it for his business. What do? You turn it off,
do the Tango,
you turn it back on again.
See, System Restore is a rather useful utility sometimes, that if a problem happens with your PC, you can restore to a previous date, theoretically, where the problem didn't exist. The problem was it also restores all the spyware and viruses you had at that time, too. So we
and also there are some viruses that actually will hide in the System Restore area, which is unchecked
more
by a lot
more,
of programs.
Yeah, more and more.
So people need to be aware when you turn it off, it erases
the previous restore
form.
Right, right. Right.
So
you're starting fresh. But if you then do an immediate save...
But
exactly.
Here's another trick, though, for you. You know, because you're going to be getting rid of those, you can scan the folder. You can copy that. It's systems information. It's a hidden folder. You can unhide it and see it. And you can get those restore points, copy those off to another disk, or burn them to a CD.
So it's on Windows systems?
No, it's right off the main root directory.
Right on the CD.
Right. Why don't you guys do that offline?
Information. Talk to me after, and I can
talk to him after.
Because that's a great trick.
I'd like to move on to the next step at some point here. Let's talk. Hold on. Let's talk about. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, on the subject of routers and the Linksys routers specifically, since I went to that router and I set up in the router, place for the block that don't allow anybody going to a certain site.
Sure.
My adware just doesn't like anything.
Right. Block.
Now, there's
block doubleclick.net, and you'll cut down a lot.
AMA, there's doubleclick. There's a whole bunch of them you can put in.
Yep. That solves a lot of the problems.
Yes.
Absolutely. What he's saying is that in a Linksys router, you can set up sites that are not allowed to go to. Doubleclick.net, Akamai.net, there's a bunch of them like that. Those places are the main places from which viruses and spyware are being distributed. If you close those down, you cut a good 90% of your viruses out.
Well, the problem is it's not illegal. DoubleClick is an advertising site. The whole issue of spyware is...
When you install a piece of software, one of the things that you didn't read in the end-user license agreement said, do you mind if... clicking accept means you'll let us install additional advertising programs in your system. So you agreed to it.
Well,
it's not illegal.
I promised to clean my room. I also have my fingers crossed.
Yeah, but...
But
this is America. Anybody sue anybody over anything?
Those addresses public.
They are
public. Everybody knows about DoubleClick. The problem is it's perfectly legal.
Yeah, initially, it was designed to help you. You see an ad for a fishing pole. You click on that. You'll start seeing more ads for fishing boats, maybe. More directed advertisement. They've used that mechanism to create extra spyware and problems in machines.
So it's the dark side. I mean, the concept is a good one. Their use is bad.
If an ISP blocked DoubleClick, they'd get sued because DoubleClick isn't doing anything illegal.
Right. You can block it on your machine. Your internet service provider, Frontier, cannot. Not legally. All right, let's talk about keeping your system clean. Now you've got it cleaned out, how are you going to keep it clean? There's a bunch of things you can do. First, everybody who logs into your system should have their own login ID. Don't share them. In addition, absolutely nobody should ever log in as the administrator unless they're actually administering the system.
Like adding a program.
Like adding or removing a program or running the security tango. The reason for this is a regular user has fewer privileges. They can't install software. That cuts down on the amount of spyware that gets installed. Doesn't get rid of it, but it cuts way down on it. There's a bunch of other things they can't do because it's a restricted account. It's just a normal user. It's easy to set them up. We can talk about that offline and maybe in one of your tips already. If it's not, it will be. But that's the sort of thing that you want to do. It's actually what I can at least show you the start. I'm not going to go through the whole series of steps because that's a lot of time. But
and for another reason, too, if something goes wrong with one of your users, plug into another user. You don't lose your whole computer because one of the users is
right. And then if one of the users is a regular user, then you log in as the administrator and you can fix them or change them.
One thing, though, and in fact, we should add it to the slide, is when you create each one of these users, and I've seen some families do it. One person is the administrator, and they've got, the wife and then, say, four kids. So you got six accounts. Adware and SpyBot now have to be run six times.
In every account. At least
every
six
account
times.
Has to right. run Adware and SpyBot individually. Because if you're using Windows XP, because each person has, if you ever see documents and settings, each person has their own folder. So that when you open up your desktop, it's got your icons arranged the way you want. Your daughter logs that. She's got different background and everything else. It's a different user. So each person has to run both the SpyBot and Adware separately, just as a keynote.
But it means you're going to have to run it less often. Yes, sir?
I know sometimes when I put, WinTV on, it shows up on my account, my son's account, my wife's account.
Because when you install software, it has two choices. You're installing it as the administrator. As the administrator, you have the choice of either installing it just for me or for everybody.
And some programs ask you that.
Some do, some don't. Some just assume, that I'm going to put it in everybody's account. But that's why only certain people should add software. There's nothing you can do about that if they don't give you the choice. You can remove it from their account, but again, as administrator, you can do that. I can't show you this because I took my own advice. I'm not running as administrator. The other thing you should do is check your logs, and that's good. The other thing you should do is check your logs regularly. There are logs saved on the system, and you should just look through them once in a while to see who's doing bad things. And for heaven's sake, just stop using vulnerable software. If you have Kazaa on your system, and your kids will stab you in your sleep if you take it off, you install it, make them run it as an average user. You'll cut down on the amount of stuff they get because they can't install anything. It's not a solution, but it's a lessening of the problem. But the only solution is don't run it. I'm sorry, there are logs.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I beg your pardon. I think I can show you these. I'm not the administrator.
Accessory system tools?
Yeah, if it's in here. Oh, there we go, yeah.
Event viewer?
Yeah, I don't see. Hello, event viewer. Well, there's supposed to be an event viewer in there, of course.
Can you manage?
No, that's the security center. What am I doing? Yeah. Yeah, do I have it on the slide? We'll show it in a minute. I don't know what I just ran, but show it in a minute.
That's not your
security center.
That's what I did. Yeah, I don't want to see that. Go away. We'll see it in another slide in just a minute. Here's the reason for that. Keep everybody's data private. Oh, I did put it in the slides. Oh, man, I'm good. Here's the things that we'll look at, creating new users and changing the password and all of that other stuff. Nobody should log in as the administrator. Not ever. Not ever. We already talked about that. We already talked about that. We already talked about that. Okay, here we go. Start all programs administrative tools event user. Now you have to be the administrator to see that. But that's how you do it. Click the start button, select all programs, select administrative tools, which is where I was. If you're the administrator, you'll see event viewer. And that will let you look at the logs. There are three of them. There's the security log, the program log, and the other one, system log. And those three, most of the stuff in there you're not going to care about. But they all have different levels of how they work. And you're looking for critical stuff.
Red stop sign.
Red stop sign. If you don't see a red stop sign, move on. If you see a red stop sign, then call Dave or Steve. Yes.
NT based.
NT, any NT 2000, 2003 XP, like that. How often should you check the logs? How often do you feel safe? You know, I'm a systems administrator. I check them every day. That's part of my job. You can check them less often if you like.
What do you mean checking? What do you see?
Well, like I said, you're looking for the red stop sign.
If you see one.
If you see one, call Dave or Steve. Yeah.
Because
you can read the error message, and if you understand it, you can handle it yourself. If you don't understand it, call someone that does.
Right.
And we can usually tell you whether it's something you got to worry about or not.
All right. How do I keep my data safe? Yes, sir.
Are those logs only in XP?
No, I just said they're in every NT 2000, 2003 XP. You can find them in Windows 98. You can find them in... I have to stop and say this one more time real loud so everybody gets it. Anything lower than Windows XP is no longer supported by Microsoft. You're not going to get updates. You're not going to get security stuff. It doesn't matter if you look at the logs. Don't bother. You can't fix what's wrong. So if you're still running Windows 98, don't bother.
Or ME.
Or ME.
2000 will end in another...
So that was the other thing that struck me about CNN and Time Magazine, and they're running 2000, a five-year-old OS.
And
yeah, you're going to have problems. Why are you surprised?
That's right. That's right. The simple reality is that it doesn't matter what you do in those operating systems. First, you can't set up multiple users because they don't have them. Secondly, you can't prevent viruses from taking over the system because... By definition, any program that runs owns the system. That's why we tell people don't run them anymore. Not just because Microsoft has stopped supporting them, but because they're crap.
How do you really
feel? I feel worse, but I didn't say it. So you need to move on. You really, really do. I'm sorry. I hate to be the bearer of bad news. You need to move on. You can't protect them, and nothing I tell you will protect them for you.
Does that mean everybody's going to hear those on this?
No.
But unfortunately, that may require you buy a new computer.
It might if your computer is old and you're running ME or 98 because it's the only thing that still runs on your machine. God bless you. Keep going. But don't expect to keep the system clean or safe. And don't do any banking on it. You were first.
Are they expected to have another system?
Yes, absolutely. That's how Microsoft makes their money. They own over 90% of the market. There's no new markets they can go to. The only thing they can do is sell you new programs into the old market.
Longhorn was due in 2004.
No, it was due in 2002.
And then 2006. And now they're hoping for 2007.
Yeah.
Vista is due out in supposedly...
I'm sorry.
Right here.
Go ahead.
Will the XP update work if you go up and buy the program for... updating it from ME?
Yes and no. One of the...
yes,
nobody
it will work. No, you don't want to do it.
The problem is this.
That way.
ME and 98 were very, very bad at keeping the registry clean. Updating is very, very bad at figuring out corrupted registries. So you just bring all your own problems along and make new ones.
So you're
Your best bet is to take it to one of these guys, have them pull all your data off, right?
Or do it yourself.
We're about to talk about that if we ever get to it. Pull all your data off, and then you can have them install the operating system fresh, bring in all your CDs so they can install your programs.
Which may have to be updated to work in XP.
And then they can put your data back and you get a new machine. Now, does that take a little bit of time? Yeah. Is it the only safe way to do it? Yeah.
Okay. You answered my question.
Thank you.
Yeah, because XP has a built-in utility.
If I were to buy a new notebook, it would have XP on it.
I suspect it would. If it doesn't...
Can you legally then take that disk and put it on your old machine?
No.
You
don't own XP. You only borrowed it. Read the license. You're only borrowing it for use on that one machine. Putting it somewhere else is not legal.
I had a customer to do it. It'll let you do it, but you've got 30 days to enjoy that machine.
Otherwise, Microsoft will just shut it down.
It shuts right down and you can't do anything.
Yeah.
Right.
Microsoft shuts it down.
So if you want to run it on two computers, you have to buy two copies.
Yeah. But I literally have had customers, well, I bought one copy. I'm not paying for another one.
And that's been true of all software ever. If you want to run Microsoft Word on two computers, you have to buy two copies. Legally,
Now, on the other hand, Smiley brought... Where'd you go, Smiley? I don't even see... There you are, over there. He brought in a bunch of copies of Ubuntu Linux. You can put this on any machine you want. You can make copies, give it to your friends, download everything. I have this running on my daughter's machine. Works like a top. She never has a problem. Once in a while, I go in and say, okay, update every single program. The operating system, the office suite, the games, every single thing. Takes about 3 minutes, done, move on.
It is on
two CDs in there. One is the live CD. Where
you just put it in your machine, you're running.
Actually, put it on your machine. It will let you
test it, play with it.
Yeah, run the program. If you like it, then you take the other CD. And put it on
right. Now, the live CD runs slow because it's running off the CD. It's got to uncompress everything. It's called Ubuntu. It's a version of Linux. Smiley was kind enough to bring in a bunch of copies. If anybody wants them, it's perfectly legal to hand those out.
And that goes back to how do I stay safe? Don't run Windows.
Don't run Windows.
Comment on the XP license agreement.
Mm-hmm.
You want funds to read it. When you install XP on the machine, they become part of the machine, and they are inseparable.
Yep.
If you take XP off, you must destroy
all
components.
Yes.
Which means the rest of the computer, too.
Yes, not only do you have to destroy the computer, you can't even keep, like, the power cord.
Yeah,
it's all got to go. This is like, did any of you remember Western Union? Remember when we had to, like, go and send things out? If you ever read the Western Union agreement, everybody thinks, oh, well, sure, they send telegram, you know, the rain, snow, sleet. Basically, if you boil it down, the Western Union agreement, it said, we may or may not make up to one attempt to think about possibly delivering this message. And that's really what it said. And compared to Microsoft, they were pikers. So if you really want it, you're right. If you've got like 8 or 10 hours and your brain doesn't hurt enough, try to figure out the end user license agreement at Microsoft. Let's go on to this.
Yeah.
Back up. I'm turning my back. I'm not going to see your question. How do I keep my data safe? You got to back it up. And by back it up, where, how often, let's talk about that. You can back it up to pretty much anything you want. The real question is how long are you going to keep it in that medium? Floppies are very fragile. Floppies do not last long.
And they don't hold very much anymore.
And they don't hold anything anymore.
40 gig hard drive, it would take you 40,000 floppies to back that up.
Yep. And the rest of your natural born life. You can back stuff up to your hard drive, but the whole point is to get it off the hard drive. Because if the hard drive dies, the backup on the hard drive won't do you any good. Now you can back it up to a second hard drive. If you've got more than one hard drive in the machine, that's good.
Better is a removable hard drive. You take off your computer, put it in your fire safe.
Right. If you've got, you can plug them in now.
USB.
You can even just stick them on your network. You can buy one that if you've got a router, you can stick it right on the router. Suddenly it appears on your desktop, and bang, you can copy stuff to it. You can copy things to a different PC. That's just like putting it on a different browser. But now it's on a whole different PC. If this one bursts into flames, that one's still there. If it's far
enough
away.
Which is why I mentioned FireSafe.
Or you can back it up over the network. You've got storage in your DSL account. You've got storage in all kinds of places. And you can put data there. So that you have places you can back up your data. And you should, bless you, you should take advantage of it. People are allergic to backing up their data. I get that. But the fact is you should do it anyway.
But the one key thing that Nick is saying, though, is that you got to hone in on is data.
Right.
If a system crashes, that's Microsoft's way of telling you it's time to reinstall the software anyway.
Right.
And you had to do some house cleaning. Always think of those photos, those documents, any pictures, you know, that are super important, or spreadsheets. Always just grab those. The programs you can always reinstall, your bookmarks and all that stuff, you can export those out to a file and put that kind of in the bundle. If you've got a whole email list that you want to keep, you can export that out
you
and save
it. You include that favorites folder in your backup.
And you include that. Only the data. Because otherwise, if you're backing it up to another hard drive or another CD, you'll be able to cut it in half of the amount of space that you're going to actually need.
And yep. Backing up the programs isn't going to do you any good anyway because you didn't back up the registry entries. When you go to put the software back, let's say you back up your programs. Great, you backed up your whole office suite onto 700 CDs. Great, God bless you. Now your system dies, you reinstall the operating system, you put back those 700 CDs, guess what? System doesn't even know they're there because they're not in the registry. You have to install from the original CDs in order for the data, for the entries to get into the registry.
So there's two real, how to word this. You do a backup to keep safe. And two things that can happen is your whole computer dies. And then you got to reinstall everything, and that can take a very long time and be tedious, but you have your backup of your data. The other issue is a single file gets corrupted or lost. Then you can restore just that one little file. So it's you can back up everything, sort of, but that takes a huge amount of backup space and a lot of time. It's much faster and much easier just to back up your data. And for most people, the easiest thing to do is put everything in the My Documents folder. The biggest question I get a lot of times about backup is, where's my stuff? In fact, I ask that all the time. Can you back up my data for me? Yeah, sure. Where is it? I don't know. So save it in your My Documents folder. Know where you're saving your documents, then it's a lot easier to back up later.
Yeah.
I've maximized documents to my second drive.
Mm-hmm.
So when I put something in it, I just back up.
Right. The danger there is that if the computer itself fails, both hard drives could be lost. Which is why we mentioned CD or some removable media. You can take out of your computer, put in a fire safe, store in another building.
Right now you can get like enclosures, USB enclosures. They're like $38. You open it up and you can slap any size IDE hard drive you want in it. Whether it's a 40, 80, 120, 160, 250, whatever. It just hooks onto the USB port. That's double backup. And that's always a good thing. You'd never know when one backup might fail, and I've had this happen with clients. Back with the tapes. He literally had a series of tapes, and we went back to the current one that he had backed up, and it had a hiccup. Luckily, we still had the other backup from the week before that, and that saved his bacon. He only had to re-enter 1 week's worth of data instead of going back many weeks. So, you know, you have it on
that
one drive and another drive. You know, that's separate. You never have it protected too much. Until you lose it that one time, you lose data one time. And I had that happen to me where I had just set up all our clients and my Peachtree crapped the bed. Literally, trashed the whole database, everything else, system went down. We had to spend 3 months recreating and re-entering that data. And as a business person, you know, that's your worst nightmare coming through. I now have on my server a RAID system. I got a redundant drive. I burn it to CD, and all my personal information, because I'm now in QuickBooks, goes to another machine, just an additional backup there.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I burn it to CD. I've got it on my hard drive. I back it up to two different drives on the network. One is at work, and that goes to a tape, and the other one's in Philadelphia.
That was a question I had about the network. Well, I just noticed that CD is conspicuously absent. Is there a reason you don't recommend CD?
Yes and no.
Okay.
I'm open to answers.
Thank you. The next question. Oh, sorry. The reason that I don't recommend CDs is because when people put data on CDs, they tend to think it's permanent. It's not. If you buy very expensive CDs, you can get 5 years out of it. You buy the cheap CDs, you know where you get 100 for $11 and there's a $20 rebate? If you... Yeah. Oh, look, she's blushing. You look good in red, though, Debbie. You do. You should wear it more often. The problem with that is they fade over time, and I would not be...
Time could be a week.
Right, but I'm saying a year. I wouldn't trust them more than a year. So if it's, you know, it's your call. In particular, if it's like, you know, it's old documents you wrote, who cares? But if it's your business, or even more importantly, if it's pictures of your grandkids, you want to put it on a medium that'll last. CDs, like I said, if you buy the real expensive ones, maybe you get 5 years.
Name brand.
Name brand and CDRs, one time write. Okay? If you have the rewritables, eventually they fade. So I don't put CDs on there. Partially because I wait for somebody to ask the question and watch them go red.
And writing CDs is very time-consuming.
The only reason...
Yeah, it is. Moving it to another harder, like... Done.
See, I do... Like Nick said, though, with his premise, I use just the CDRs because the most I'm keeping one is 1 week.
Nice shirt!
And I sit there... And I replace the last week's CD gets replaced... Literally, I sit there and scratch it, and it goes into the trash. Because, like you said, I buy 100 of them.
Yep.
And I'm only all I carry that lasts 1 week, just in case. Because otherwise, I got it other places, but I'm not sitting there thinking, oh, you know, that's got to last me 5 years. No, it's just got to last a week.
And you know what? You may have CDs that lasted you 5 years. If so, God bless you. I don't really care. The simple reality is that I won't recommend them because I don't trust them.
Same here.
Neil? I have no idea. I haven't seen them on the shelves since they bought them. Verbatim used to be the gold standard.
There still is one that still does do gold ones.
And they lasted forever. That's true. Who did? I haven't seen one, and I can't tell you how long.
Okay, so if I have a CDRW and I'm doing my backups to that, when you talk about it fading, does that mean if I look at that CD 1 week, later, it might have faded, or are you saying if I try to keep it for a year?
It's not the drive, it's the disk, CDR disks. If you've got a CDRW drive and you write a CDR disk, you're good. But the point is, yes, they fade over time. It's like I don't know, if you take a sheet of paper and you print out something on it and you stick it in the back shelf of your car window, it fades over time. At what point is it no longer readable? That's different for every CD drive on the market.
Okay, so if I write it
right,
one
and
day
disc.
And I read it a week later,
it may be fine.
All right, now if I wait another year and I write to that disc again.
No, it's a CDR. It's not a rewritable, remember? I'm only guaranteeing CDRs, straight R's, for a year. The RWs, I won't.
The point of an RW is that you can erase it and write to it again, which means it's very easily erasable, which means you can lose your data.
Okay, so if I'm backing up regularly, then I've got multiple...
Right.
Yeah, you don't care about the old one, as long as you're backing up all your data all the time. That's my other point, is what do you back up? Everything. Everything, every time. And if you have things that are big, like you've got, you know, 200 pictures of your grandkids... I back them up to another hard drive. And then every few years, maybe, you know, 5-10 years down the road, then maybe I back it up to a different hard drive, buy another one and back it up to that one. You know, no data are permanent. I used to work at a bank. I used to work at Chase. And Y2K, right? Back when there was a Chase. Y2K, we're all worried about fixing all the programs, yada, yada, yada. They had a program that was, of course, mission critical. Of course, touched everything in the bank. Of course, no source code. They finally found the original set of punch cards.
Oh my God.
No punch card reader. I remembered that on my boss's 25th anniversary in his job, we grabbed an old punch card reader out of the basement, spray painted it, decorated it, and gave it to him as a joke. We ran in there, grabbed that thing off a shelf, ripped all the stuff off it, hoped it worked. It did. We read it in. We got it. The point is, media change.
I had a customer today bring in SideQuest discs. They want it backed up.
What?
Anyone remember SideQuest discs?
Nobody does. They're ancient four. Yeah, you do. Well, you're old. They're an old format of disc that just isn't
five
around
and a
anymore.
5 1/4.
40 whole megabytes on a single disc.
They were
and
an
that
optical.
Was huge.
You remember them, but you're young. Your father must have told you about them. So the thing is that media change, and the only thing you can guarantee right now is network storage.
That's my question. Okay, network storage. You mean like a company on?
Could be.
Okay.
Or it could be another computer you own on your own
suppose
network.
Suppose you have one computer. Is there a company you trust?
There are a lot of companies that I trust. One is, for example, as I said, if you're a DSL customer, you've got some space on their system to back your stuff up.
I've got the other one.
You can also I can't help.
That's pretty much true of every ISP.
But you can also buy drives that attach directly to your network. Let's say you've got a router.
Uh-huh.
You can buy a drive that connects right into the router and then looks like another drive on your system. And then you can copy to that one. And then 5-10 years from now, you buy another drive and copy all the data off of that one.
Okay.
Right? That's how that works.
Okay.
How much space? How much space, Jay, is the you provide 10 meg? 25 meg per account.
Right, and you get 8 accounts.
Now 25 megs is a whole lot of Word files. It's not that many pictures, but it's a whole lot of Word.
So it depends. You don't necessarily put every little thing up there. Dear Fred, I'll meet you for lunch tomorrow. Yeah, I'm about to back that up.
Yeah, I'm a writer, and I use this little flash drive before I burn
wonderful
CD when I'm writing.
Talk to him about flash drives.
Got one in my pocket.
Sure.
Extra blinky lights.
Here's what happened recently. Normally, when I save it on the CD drive, well, Ben said he wanted to put it on the flash drive.
Right.
On E, and I say yes, and it does. Lately, it's been writing to the E drive. I don't know how it got there, and I don't know where my stuff is. Is it on the hard drive? Is it on the E drive? And it's also bringing music into it. I never even brought
it. I don't know what's... Well, obviously, without looking at your system, now you got to bring it to one of these guys.
Yeah.
Right? But without looking at it, I can't tell you. But you're right. Something has changed in your system, probably from a Windows update, and now you have to figure out how to set it back again. But those little thumb drives are an excellent thing to do.
Yeah, I love that.
You can also get... This particular laptop has an SD card reader. So I can just stick an SD card in there. This one is fake. But you can get them up to a gig.
I was wondering why you unplugged it live.
Yeah.
Well, I've got one here that's a 512.
Right, and he's got a 512. Now, what's cool about that is I can take that one, put it in here, and read the files. Put something on there, give it back to him. He can then take it home, put it in his machine, do whatever he wants. These things, the little SD cards, they're another way to do it, just like with those flash drives. The nice thing about them is you can get readers for your system. You can get them in laptops. You can get them for your
PDA.
Readers are like $30 from a company called Dazzle. You can get them
in
CompuSA
anywhere.
You can
get them up to, I think it's not up to
15,
13 and 1.
I've seen 15. There's 15 different media card formats you could use. So the readers now have 15 slots on them for whatever card you might have.
And they port to the USB port, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. So you're all good to go. Do we want to take like a break or something?
Yes.
Do we? I apologize. I suddenly realized we've been talking for like ever.
2 hours.
We've got about another hour to go. But why don't we take 10 minutes, seventh inning stretch, sing the national anthem, and we'll move on.
Okay.
So they give you this 30-day free trial, hoping you'll get hooked on it, and then pay the $400 to buy Microsoft Office.
Yeah.
And then when you do buy the full Microsoft Office, you have to delete the trial, so it knows you bought the full program.
I'm running next to the old machine, except that Windows ME. Now, I had to
look
at ME. Now there's so much garbage on the internet. It's
It's very, very difficult. It's like driving down a little part of the glass. You just pick up quite a bit of stuff. Of course, I got some sons that are both adults and married. The younger son, him and his wife have this, they get into websites and do a lot of government work. He likes to download music and that stuff.
Right. I've got to tell you, might be able to find a drive on eBay, but yeah, we can read both of them.
And I should really, what is it in my new computer?
The fact that it was spyware.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, the problem is I don't completely understand.
Okay, thanks.
As far as getting rid of temporary files,
My personal record is 40,000 files, and the computer only had 20,000 files. 20% of the files.
He said something about running the
system.
So I did. Now, I've never run a safety.
Well, if everything worked fine, you're great. The problem
like
that
said tonight,
you run into is if there's any little thing wrong, then you may not even know it again.
Yeah.
Running an upgrade can magnify the
problem. Now, I never heard of that.
And eventually,
that your mind is an upgrade at all. I never wanted
to be generally recognized.
Life's a call, runs a call.
It's kind of one of the jokes that every 6 months or so, your computer's going to crash your heart, you probably need to read
a
book.
So you had the idea and you want to bring it to somebody like you.
The basic difference between the upgrade and the full is the upgrade will last for your original to prove that your license to run the upgrade. The full install will just run by itself, so you don't have to keep a lot of your own disks around. Which is a big problem you run into. Right. And if you're having it was an upgrade in 98, then you want to go 95.
Okay.
The
does the name brand
Nick, did those Linux disappear?
Yeah, they're gone, but I'll tell everybody how to get to it. Okay, we should probably get started again. Thank you. A number of you have actually asked, where are the Linux CDs? They're gone. Get over it. Or we can simply say, Advil. Thank you. No, two more. Yeah. No, I take hundreds of these at a time. Ooh, excuse me, here's the moment. Not that you people are giving me a headache.
I hope not. You said before it was lower.
Is at ubuntulinux.org. If you just go to ubuntu.org, you get some other not-for-profit organization that does stuff. It's ubuntulinux.org. And here you can download... You can download the software yourself, or you can just ask them to send you some free CDs.
They'll send you 10.
They'll send you 10 without a question. They won't send you one, but they'll send you 10. And if you have a reason, they'll send you hundreds. You know, if you say, well, I want to give them out at my user group, and there's, 238 members, they'll send you 300 CDs. They don't care.
Next couple weeks.
The guy who started Ubuntu, Mark Shuttleworth, an African-American gentleman who is an internet multimillionaire and was the guy who went up in the Russian shuttle. And now he's decided, the heck with everything, I'm just going to give it all back. And here it is. It's all Ubuntu. It's a version of Linux. I beg your pardon. You're right. You're absolutely right. I apologize. Linux is an operating system like Windows is an operating system.
General sense of operating system you can imagine.
Yeah, just the simple fact that it runs your computer. It's a completely different product from Windows. It runs it in a completely different way. If there's time at the end, all the CDs are gone, so I won't be able to run one. Maybe somebody will stick around with their CD.
I've got
and
Linux on my computer.
Oh, there you go. Well, yes, you do. You're running Unix.
I'm running Unix.
But it's an operating system that essentially replaces Windows. It has its own stuff. It has its own office suite. It has its own games. It has its own
free.
It's all free.
And Linux is based on Unix, which was the first operating system developed in the 60s. So it predates Microsoft by 40 years.
Mozilla is a browser. Mozilla is a company that makes a browser called Firefox, which runs under Windows or under Linux or on a Mac. Right. And in fact, generally speaking, if you get Ubuntu, you not only get the operating system, you also get 16,000 programs, one of which is Firefox, another one of which is OpenOffice.org, which is an entire office suite. Like Microsoft Office is an office suite. Is an office suite. Stop. No politics. So you get all those programs with it. And like I said, instead of having to update everything individually, you just go and say, I want to update everything now. There it is. It's all updated.
And no viruses.
Can
you use this operating system along with and add Windows on your machine too?
In fact, if I had brought my laptop instead of this one, I can dual boot. I can boot Windows or I can turn around and boot Linux, not a problem. And the Linux machine actually will read the Windows directory. So I save everything on the Windows side. So if I go into Windows, I can open it up there. And if I go into Linux, I can open it up there. Because OpenOffice.org will save document files or Excel files or PowerPoint files.
The neat thing about Ubuntu is that it comes with a bootable CD. You can boot Linux off your CD, run the entire Linux suite, see how everything works without touching your Windows hard drive and leaving your Windows hard drive alone.
And then when you reboot, take the CD out, reboot, you're back into Windows again.
And one of the other big advantages is, you know, you hear us say how with, and I was talking to a few folks, the demand, you know, for Windows XP, what you have to have as far as memory, yada, 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 yada. Well, it's Ubuntu, right?
Ubuntu.
Bless you.
Thank you.
Literally runs on a lot less resources. I mean, the more you give it, it will take advantage of it. But I've known a few folks that have taken an old 386 or a 486.
So these machines that are still running 98 or ME that can't run Linux, or can't run
XP, they can run
Linux
that.
Is fine.
Linux.
Now, would I recommend you wholesale jump over? No. Would I recommend you boot the live CD and play around with it a little bit? Yeah, you deserve it. You owe it to yourself.
Another advantage is that if the Windows crashes, you can throw the live CD in, boot off of that, and then take your files.
Get all your files back.
Yeah. Yeah.
See, that's one of the advantages of both of Ubuntu is if your PC crashes, you can't boot from a floppy anymore because floppies don't read the NTFS in XP. You can't boot a Windows CD and get to your desktop and see your files again. So you have to come to Dave or I. We pull your hard drive out, put it in another computer to get back to your files.
In fact, there are places on the net where you can download a recovery CD that fits on one of those little CDs like the ones I gave out, and you can get them in credit card shape so you can put them in your wallet. And you can boot them, and they've got all the tools on them to recover a Windows machine. But they boot into Linux, sorry.
Yep. Yeah, I was going to say. So by using this Ubuntu Live CD, you can get your Windows files back if Windows crashes without taking the rest of the hard drive with it.
Right. In fact, this presentation, which you all thought was written, was a PowerPoint presentation. I'm running it in PowerPoint on this machine because it's not my machine, but I wrote it in OpenOffice. I wrote the whole thing, created it, edited it, did everything on it, ran it in OpenOffice until today when I decided I wanted to play with this machine and took it home instead. And luckily I could get at my file.
Yeah, so instead of paying $400 to buy Microsoft Office, you can use OpenOffice for free.
And it also has built-in Acrobat.
It'll save things in PDF format.
PDF format.
Directly, so you can just do that.
Two things. When you said reboot, you mean physically put the disk in each time?
If you're running it off the live CD, yes. On my system that I didn't bring tonight, I have partitioned the hard drive and it dual boots. When it comes up, I get a menu. Do you want to run Ubuntu or do you want to run Windows? I pick one, or I just wait 10 seconds and it runs Ubuntu. It's taken the hard drive and broken it into two pieces. On one piece, it pretends it's a whole hard drive and put Windows on it. On the other piece, it pretends it's a whole hard drive and put Linux on it. And then there's a little controller program that says, which one am I going to pretend is the whole hard drive this time? That's basically what happens. That's the boot menu.
Okay, he did answer the other question about Office, about going to
Yeah, that's at openoffice.org.
And that's a way around the $400 per computer that you're supposed to pay. If you want to put Office on three computers, you got to pay $400 for each computer.
How much did you allocate for a partition?
It was a 20 gig hard drive. I split it in half. And both of them are, the Linux side is practically empty.
Not a very big operating system because it is so, the code is so neat and efficient. Like I say, it doesn't need much resources. I had folks running it with 386s and 128 mega memory.
But here's
the machine that they were going to throw up.
They're in the process. They have a beta of the 2.0 version out now, and it's going to have it has everything in there. It's got Writer now. Impress is Writer is Word. Impress is PowerPoint. Math is a special math program to do equations. Draw is a vector drawing program. Calc is the spreadsheet. And Base is going to be in the new 2.0 version, and it's essentially Microsoft Access. Well, it works like Microsoft Access.
How long has this company been in existence? Why have I heard about it?
You haven't been listening to us. We've been talking it up for at least a couple of years.
And how do they make money? How do they stay in existence?
They don't make money off of selling the product, obviously. They make money by selling service and support to large corporations. So if you've got 100,000 people who all want to run Windows, you spend, you know, $700 times 100,000, plus you buy a support contract. Now you save the $7 million for the software and just buy the support contract, and that's more than enough money for these folks. So that's how they do it. And then, and by the way, we'll give it away to everybody else. Since we're giving it away to you, for, you know, and you're buying the support, that's your choice. We're still going to give it away to everybody else.
It's open source. Though.
It is completely open source. If you want to, you can download the source code and rewrite it. It's all yours. Knock yourself out. Better you than me. All right. I'll pass too. So we've talked about where to back up. How do you back up? Well, obviously, you just copy the data by hand. There are backup programs that will automate the process for you. Some of them you can write yourself. I have a little batch file that does everything for me at 3 a.m. over my network connection, nice and fast. I don't even know what happens.
NovaStore is a good one.
NovaStore, you talk about the actual, you know, programs you can buy.
Yeah, NovaStore is a very good product that if you want things to do it automatically for you, you can schedule it any time, day or night. I've got a number of companies that are using it, and literally they have it at night run, say, around 7 o'clock. It'll take, they're hitting the, again, burning to CDRs. So they'll have it burn to a CDR, they keep it for 1 week, and then, you know, just keep replacing it. And they're doing this maybe twice a week because of their business. But you can schedule it to do it automatically for you, so you don't even have to be around. Once it's done, it even spits the CD out, waiting for you to just take it out and put it in a storage spot.
There are some simple personal backup programs. Backup My PC is a nice one. On the Mac, we use one called Silver Keeper, and it has the added advantage of being completely free. So
not a bad thing.
Do not use Microsoft Backup.
Microsoft Backup itself isn't that bad.
But
Restore sucks.
It backs up great, you just can't restore it.
But here's the thing, though. Backup, and this has been back since DOS 1.0, that you run into the issue. Using the backup program. So say I use the Microsoft Backup, and the system crashes, or it burns up, and I got these restores on the CD. I go out and buy a new system. Well, say I was on this old system running Windows XP Service Pack 1. Now I get this brand new computer. It's running Windows XP Service Pack 2. And it's got all the updates. It's dumb enough that it can't read the backup that was created with the original Service Pack 1.
Which is another reason to always run.
And this
updates.
Has been an issue since back in DOS 101. Gates still hasn't gotten it. I've got a friend over at WAM there that he bought, he did the backup. He used the backup to make this file that he was creating to write this book on birds. Literally, years. It's all on 1 5-1/4 floppy. I can see the file there, but I still to this day can't figure out what version of DOS backup he used so I can use that same restore. And I have been trying DOS 4, DOS 5, all the iterations in between that, 5.1, 5.3, didn't find 5.4.
And it probably is in that, and that's the problem.
Could be one of those. You have to use that specific one, so don't use Microsoft.
Right, any one of these others work. Again, if you're backing it up to those, the problem with a flash drive is there are limited lifetime. Read the manual that came with it, I know. It was a dirty word. I apologize for using a dirty word. We use crapped and sucked, but I'd never used manual until now. they're only good for a certain number of reads and writes. Oh, yeah. See? So after, and it depends on the medium, most of them 100,000, you think, well, that's like forever. Well, do the math. If you use it twice a day, blah, 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 how many years is it going to last you? So be careful of that. If you're using it as a transport mechanism, right, then you're fine, because I'm taking it from this hard drive and I'm putting it on that hard drive. Well, great, you got it in three places now. It's less important. But if it's where you're backing up, so that's another problem. You have to understand your medium. That's why I say back it up. Currently, every single system on Earth, no matter what the operating system is, no matter what, will talk to a hard drive.
One of the things that some of the folks were asking me in support of what you were saying as far as we haven't seen, you know, we can sit there and say the flash drives and the CD-ROM drives. Nobody has actually come out and done a long-term, hardcore study on how long this particular CD or this brand of CDs are going to last.
They say 100 years simulated. So they put it in a room, turn the light on, turn the light off. They call that one day. Turn it on and off 100 times. Well, there's 3 months.
Well, I tested it. It was like 100 years out of their stuff.
Right. The gold standard, which they don't make anymore.
Yeah.
Now, here's the other thing. You need to know about this.
Yeah.
If you're storing your CDs upright,
Data falls off.
Yeah. Over time, go into an old house and look at the windows.
You know me.
Yeah, I know, and I was right, Dave. Go into an old house and look at the windows. You'll notice that the glass is thicker at the bottom than the top because glass is actually a liquid. And over time, gravity pulls, we all know what gravity does, and eventually over time it pulls stuff down.
Gravity sucks.
Same thing with a CD. What's the substrate in a CD? Glass. If you leave a CD on its side long enough, it'll start to thicken at the bottom and thin out at the top. Eventually, that unbalances it when you're trying to spin it at 50 zillion revolutions a second, and it'll blow up, and if you're lucky, it all blows up inside the machine and kills it and not you. But how long is that? I don't know. It depends on what brand of disk you use. Store them like this.
Flat.
Not like this.
If you don't think it can't happen, stop by my shop sometime. I literally have a CD. It's right there on the counter. It was one that we were using for a couple of years. And we were going to run it. And my tech and I were standing there talking, and all of a sudden we were, BAM! BOOM! What the hell blew up? We didn't see anything. We'll go over to this one machine that we were using the CD on, and we're here, CUMP, 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 to unplug it. And I had to take literally a cable clip, put it in a little
CD
tiny
extraction
hole.
Tool.
Yeah.
Emergency manual CD extraction tool.
And I literally had to slowly open up the drive. The CD that I've been using totally shattered. And I have that sitting on our desktop. Here's another horrifying story.
Yeah, you may have pushed the button on your CD tray too early and the CD's still spinning when it comes out. That's a knife edge. If it's spinning fast enough, it'll fly up and get you.
Here's
if
another
it's a 54X, think of how fast that's spinning.
30,
and if it flies up out of the drive.
I've got a story about that. This gentleman had the computer sitting up on his desktop. Well, he wanted to clear off more space because he got a bigger monitor. So he put it down below. His son had just loaded this new game, and he had the CDs where you just start to push it in and it goes in, catches. Well, the kid was maybe 10 minutes into the game, the CD exploded. It wound up burying part of the CD into the wall, not more than 6 feet behind him. Now, if that computer had still been up on the kid's desk, would have been buried in the kid's forehead.
Would have been right here. CD would have been right there. So you want to be kind of careful of those things. How often do you back up? How important to you is your stuff?
How much do you want to retype?
Right.
An hour's worth or a month's worth?
This is...
Just one quick question about how to back up. Even if you're going to a hard drive, is it okay to just drag it down?
Documents, yes. Applications, you can't do that with.
Absolutely, but if you're talking about documents, drag and drop works. As long as the application is closed, you can drag and drop the document. Now, that's manual, which means now you're trusting yourself to do it often enough, but it works.
And kicks your
everything. Yeah, yeah.
Like
it's not programmed.
Like a whole My Documents folder.
Yeah. So, the question to yourself is how important are your data? I back up every... My life is my writing. I write for Ask Nick, and I write for...
Ding.
Thank you. And I write for the newspaper and all that other stuff. And I want to keep all that. So I back it up in three separate places. I'm a belt and suspenders kind of guy. So I back it up every night. I wrote my own set of programs to do that. So how important is it to you to back up your data? Yes?
What about ghosting the whole hard drive?
Well, it's kind of overkill since...
And time-consuming.
And it's incredibly time-consuming.
I can back up my hard drive in 6 minutes with ghost. And that's only nine.
Here's one problem, though. If you're running Windows XP... And,
we have to boot a floppy disk so your registry's not running in order to do a full bootable backup.
But one problem with XP, though. Say you do this ghost image, right?
Yep.
And your machine blows up. And say you got to replace the motherboard. Put that ghost image back, but your Windows isn't going to work. Because when you set up Windows XP, it, in the registry, records what motherboard you're using, what video card. Video card's no problem. That, you can switch in and out. But as far as the motherboard, you have to, once you put that ghost image back, you have to reinstall Windows XP over XP again. So it can re-register this new motherboard.
And all the motherboard resources.
Can I take that hard drive then and put it into another machine and let that hard drive, even though it has...
If the hard drive didn't go with it, what if it was all struck by lightning?
That hard drive, even though it goes into another box and you're running Windows XP, you have to reinstall Windows XP all over again on top of it. Because it is a different...
Unless it's an identical machine.
But I can always get the files off of it.
You can still get... But it's still not going to, you know...
If you ghost it, you may be able to get the files off. If you ghosted the whole image, probably.
But it's not going to boot correctly.
Well, we should back
up. But you can put it. You can restore to a second drive in the new machine.
Yeah. Ghost is a program, a really neat utility, so semantic welcome, that lets you copy everything on one hard drive to another hard drive. We use it a lot when you buy a new hard drive. You get a bigger hard drive, you copy everything over to it. But you can also use it as a backup of everything on your hard drive onto another hard drive. And the goal and the hope is that if your main hard drive fails, you just plug in your backup drive and it's as if it was your main hard drive and you're back up and working instantly.
Right, but if you change things like the motherboard, Windows gets involved.
Yeah.
I won't discourage you because it's way better to back up than not to back up. I'm just not going to promise that in every circumstance it's easy to get your data back.
I've used it a lot of times when you put a program in, you have all the best intentions in the world, and suddenly your computer's just gone nuts, and you try to unbury yourself.
It's a good point in that aspect.
So you have your ghost in you.
Yeah, that works fine.
If you put in another motherboard, isn't Microsoft going to claim that's a different computer?
Yes.
And then you then have to call it. Motherboard,
you have
hard
to call
drive.
It.
I think video card's okay, but definitely
not
motherboard.
All of them.
Hard drive, if you change your hard drive, XP and Office 2000 now and above will quit working because you have to activate based on your hardware. So you have to call Microsoft, wait X number of hours on the phone, convince them that, yes, I bought a new motherboard, not I'm stealing Windows.
No, you don't have to anymore. All you have to do is when you go to do the reinstall over it, you will then, because it knows that that was already on there, you will then have this long number. You have to call this 800 number.
Right.
And you have to repeat all the letters there. And once you do this whole code, this voice will sit there and start giving you the block of five numbers. Because it has to validate your old number.
Don't get behind.
So it'll validate your old number because... What it'll do is it takes your original number and generates this new number. And you have to give your name and all that stuff to verify you or you. And then you start reading these codes, and over the phone, the 800 number, it'll start giving you a new number to put in.
These are the annoyances we were worried about when Microsoft first started talking about activation. You have to activate Windows XP, you have to activate Office 2000. Adobe now, you have to activate all their products, Macromedia products, you have to activate them over the internet. And if your hardware changes enough, it thinks you're trying to steal the program. It assumes everyone's a thief. thinks you're trying to steal the program and you have to reactivate it, and it's and, you know, no matter how easy they try to make it on the phone, it's still a pain.
Right. Okay. Where do you go for help? Oh, Dave. Steve, where are you on here? You're under here. You fell out of the bottom. I apologize. I completely apologize. Sound bites?
Wrong plan.
Yes. My fault. It's a different machine.
Yep.
Sound bites? Ask Nick. Enright PC. And Steve will tell you where the Jesse Group is since they fell off the bottom of the...
Well, you got the MacAv logo.
We got the MacAv logo. We have three stores. 439 Monroe Avenue, downtown. Between Alexander and Meigs, 20 Assembly Drive in Mendon, near the corners of Route 64 and 251, and we have a kiosk in Eastview Mall near the food court.
I wonder what happened when they printed
phone numbers on our business card up here.
Good. Okay, and yeah, get the cards. That's where you go for help. Soundbites were on, of course.
Should also
God bless the folks at Frontier. They've given us the opportunity to do this. We're going to let him talk about...
User groups.
And we've got the local user groups. There's the Mac group. There's the PC group. And before we get to questions, we're going to have Jay. This is Jay Gualiado. He is the man when it comes to Frontier DSL. And once again, I want to...
Thank you for electing Sam here.
I can't tell you how much we appreciate this. God bless you, my friend. You're a good man.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, sir.
Well, folks, thank you very, very much for attending. We've done some upgrading to our plant, so I want to make you aware of that. There's more upgrades to be coming, so areas where we may not have been able to reach is your home with DSL.
Louder.
I'm sorry?
Louder.
Louder. So some areas where we haven't been able to get DSL to, it's coming now. We're going to be working on that throughout the fall and the winter. And also, about a month or so ago, we increased our speed tiers up to 6 megabits. For those of you that care about such things as speed, we've done that. And as of late, and thank you for reminding me, we've also enhanced our product by offering a free suite of security products when you sign up. And we're using the Computer Associates Easy Armor Trust, which is a firewall and an antivirus program in one. So that's something that we just started within about the last 2 weeks. Just kind of getting our feet wet with that now. So there's a bunch of different things that are going to be coming up within probably the next year or so for us. We're actually going to be upgrading the network not only for distance to the home to get DSL, but we're going to be looking at actually upgrading it to deliver a variety of new services. One is video. And we hope to be seeing that within 2006. So then there won't be just one video provider any longer in the market. Now, you do satellite dishes. We sponsor and we supply the dish now. But at some point in time, we'll also be delivering video signals, and I'm hoping we're going to be seeing that within a year's time. From a Frontier standpoint, are there any questions? I know I've talked to some of you already, and I owe some of you some things.
I do a speed test in the DSL. High speed. What should I see?
You know, that's going to vary, but. And it's also going to vary the distance that you live from the central office. I usually, depending upon time of day, things like that, I usually see anywhere from 3 to high 5. Well, you're like someone else here, I'd like to get your phone number before you go. Because I want to have, our engineer, I have two to check. I'd like to check yours too.
A lot of people get too hung up about speed tests. When you're surfing the web and looking at web pages, you're downloading a bunch of little files. The only real time that really high speed test would matter is if you're downloading huge files. And you download the same file a minute later, you get a different speed. Because the internet is so dynamic and fluctuates so much.
Yeah.
That second you get a speed test number, you run the speed test again, a second later you get a different number.
The only time you get a true reading is if you're running off of a directly connected machine. The minute you're going through anybody else, you're at their mercy. So, for example, go to Google, go to CNN, go anywhere you like, you will not get anywhere near 2 megabits per second.
Through trace route, you're probably going through 20 computers to get from you to CNN.
Right, and so it does, you know, God bless the people who run speed tests every day, but in the real world, it simply doesn't matter. It's the website that's slow. Unless you're downloading Ubuntu every day, you really, the speed that you download at, it doesn't much matter. Your email downloads in the background, your website is at the mercy of the web server anyway. And yes, if you go to a website, and a not terribly popular website, at 3 in the morning, chances are that your speed, and it's got a lot of big pictures on it, your speed might matter. The rest of the time, absolutely not.
The internet is global. It's always noon somewhere.
The slow part of the system is not the network.
The one good analogy is, depending on the time of day, say I was trying to get from here to a website in Buffalo, just 70 miles away. Maybe during the peak time, I might get a direct connect to there, maybe going through Potato there. Other times, you could be routed all the way out to California, maybe back to Florida, up to Tennessee, back out to Oklahoma, and then finally get to Buffalo.
And that's just the way the internet works.
That's one thing I guess a lot of folks don't think. It just goes directly to that site. No, you're literally, depending on traffic, being routed all over the world.
Once you figure out how the internet works, it's continually amazing that it works at all. There's 20 million computers on the internet. You could go through every one of them between here and next door.
Sorry to steal your thunder there, Chip.
Don't your operator have been looking at operating on internet or power lines? That's something that
there is a company in town looking into that.
There is one that's doing that. It's Ron Boy, that's perfect.
Current communications out in Henrietta.
Yeah, we have not.
There are problems with that. Every time there's a transformer on the electric pole, the internet signal stops, so it doesn't work very well.
There's an inherent problem with separation between homes.
Yeah. You can buy things for your network now. Say you want to put a computer in the garage. You don't want to string a wire. You can get a power line that you plug into your house, and then another one into the garage. And it puts Ethernet on your electric lines, and then you can put a computer out there. The problem is your neighbor could get that computer line too, because the way the electrical systems are built.
I've heard more and more about
it's getting bigger in some cities, but there's a lot of technical hurdles to overcome, and they're slowly working on it.
Yeah. Well, I can say this to you. While you're talking about the main transformers and the power grid itself, now I happen to use the power in my home to send a signal through within the house. That works fine.
I think home line is one of the products. Power line is one of the products.
Home line.
Now, as a demonstration, I'm doing a trace route to Ask Nick. I start out here in CNZ Corp, which is a local company. I go to rochester.elinetwork and somewhere out of the network, McLean, Virginia. I don't know where ASBN is. I've gone to Washington, D.C.
Wow.
I'm in New York. I'm now in Philadelphia. And there I am. My service. So I've gone halfway around the Eastern Seaboard to get to Ask Nick. The same thing no matter where you go. So, and if you were watching, you saw how slow it is. Slow. These are fast in here. This is the local network. This is the Frontier DSL net. Now get out off the DSL net, and it starts slowing down considerably. So the speed that you get to Ask Nick has nothing to do with the speed. You get to Ask Nick just as fast if you're on. At RIT, I have a 100 megabit connection to a OC3. Was that 48 gigabytes per second or something? 45 gigabits per second. I get Ask Nick just as fast there as I do at home. It totally doesn't matter because it's the speed of the other system rather than the speed of the download. Well,
don't these files also get fragmented and some go different paths.
Exactly. So they go different paths.
Exactly.
So you have no idea. That's part of the, you go one time to a speed test, the second time to a speed test, it's all different.
Warriors of the Net.
Yeah, Warriors
is
of the
this
Net.
Great little animated movie to show you how a piece of information gets broken up into a billion IP packets. Each one of those packets could take a separate route to the destination. It's like if you're going to drive from here to Buffalo, there's a billion ways to do it on all the different roads.
Right.
Same thing happens on the internet. Your packets travel everywhere, and they get reassembled at the other end, you hope.
It's like those Cannonball Run movies, where they take 700 people in New York and end up in California, and they all take different routes around the country, but they all get to the same place, same idea.
Okay, I'm using the other one, which I won't say.
One of the other ones, there's like 100 different internet service providers in town.
It's the other one. The other one. Okay.
Like I said, I did a good job.
You did a great... This is the guy who sold you that originally. He's the man who made it as popular as it is.
Either way, I'm winning.
Anyway, now, is it true, if I live in a complex, is it true depending on how many people in my complex are on the computer, depending on the speed of my computer? Is that true?
With not the speed of your computer,
not
the speed of your internet.
The speed of the internet.
That's what I meant. I mean, if one person's on or if 100 people are on.
I get a kick out of the marketing departments of both companies. Both networks are shared. They're just shared at a different point.
That's correct.
With Roadrunner, shared on a big loop. With Frontier, it's shared at your phone switch. So they're both shared. And it doesn't matter because it's the other end that's going to be slow anyway.
That's correct. There's a neighborhood can only supply certain amount. I'm sorry?
I thought the cable had a limit of 250 people on node.
Yeah, the practical limit is 100. That's true. That's an Ethernet limit.
Well, you know, it used to be 500. It used to be 500. Then it was 250. The reason now it's come down much more, and as Nick said, probably in the 100 range, is because of this other product, this other phone product that's out there, the shoddy product that they put out. and that's very, very big, which I, by the way, helped develop. But it's very, very bandwidth intensive, as you know, especially on the upstream.
So, yeah.
Would you see a difference between DSL Lite and DSL whatever?
Well, you know, what I've done to try that out myself is I brought my office modem down to DSL Lite. And I wanted to see what that was like. And I did not see a negligible difference on my downstream. I don't do a lot of heavy downloading of anything. You know, I'm out there doing research. And where I did see a little bit was when I was uploading intense graphics, large PDF files. But again,
for general web traffic, you probably won't notice. But if you're stealing video off the internet, then you will notice.
Yeah. Definitely.
Right, your kids will notice when they run BearShare.
Yeah.
They notice big time, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, and I'm not a gamer, so.
And if you think it's that slow, then you just take yourself back and go hook up back to a modem and dial up.
Yeah, dialing.
You dial up. Nothing.
Does Frontier DSL still suffer under the 18,000-foot limitation on the local loop?
All ADSL. Yeah, absolutely.
The 18,000 feet sounds
like
a lot, but it isn't with the way
that's
one of the other issues.
That's our limitation.
Roadrunner talks about distance from the phone switch is what makes Frontier slow.
Yeah.
And then Frontier talks that with Roadrunner, how many people in your loop
and
makes
nodes,
it slow.
Yeah.
They're both right.
They're both addressing the issue
by putting more loops in
there. Well, there are some. And you know, how we are thinking of addressing this is with the network upgrades and just going to 20 megs soon. So, hopefully within 2006.
Yeah.
And that should put everyone to bed.
With the recent upgrade in speed on the DSL, I have not seen my speed double. It was 3,000, 6,000. My own speed has gone up 1.5 times. Now, the DSL modem I'm using is one of the old Cisco 677 and I had one person say, oh, well, that can't go that fast. Is that true, or is that still capable of the higher speed?
Yeah, I don't know that. I don't know that.
Because there's other things could.
Yeah.
Maybe my own network can't handle the higher speed.
I will find that out for you, though, what that's capable of, because I don't know the model number. It's a shame. I know more about the Time Warner mode.
I know.
But I will find that out for you, okay? Make sure I give you my card before we go. Yeah, sir?
What's your vision of the internet in 20 years?
Nick?
Oh, we get to answer that one.
I think that what you're going to say, well, you know, I want to know where the hell my rocket belt is and where my flying car is. So take this with an incredible grain of salt. With you know, God willing, I'll be around in 20 years for you to yell at me. But I honestly believe that we're going to see a lot of incremental changes in speed. Unless magic happens, right, unless transporters and things like that suddenly exist, what we're going to see is...
Someone invented the transporter by already. Come
right.
but
practical one. Unless you see that, what you're going to see is a change in carriers. Photons, doing things with light and doing things with whatever the next, maybe on the ether, something. But except for that, I don't think the face of the internet is going to be all that much different. I truly don't. Because we'll just do more. Well, we already got internet 1 and 2, right? And now they want to put up a 3. You may not know this, but you guys are running on a slow internet. It used to be we had one internet, and it belonged to the government, and they let a few institutions like RIT in because we were doing work for them.
For an incredible amount of money.
For an incredible amount of money.
$20,000 a month.
Right. And then they gave the internet to everybody, and all you lowlifes got on. So we designed our own internet, which is way faster, and we're on it. And on yours, because all the good stuff's on yours. But we still have our own. The government and certain educational institutions still have their own. Now they're talking about giving all you people a good one. So we're going to invent number 3 now, so we'll have an even better one than you. But that's the way it works. It's incremental changes like that. They get faster and better. 20 years ago, if I'd said to you, I can take a little piece of wire no larger than a human hair and send 100,000 voice signals through it using light, you'd have slapped me. So 20 years from now? But it's going to be, I believe, an incremental change in terms of what we do with it.
And if you get him over to your house like he did to me one time, I got to tell this story.
He won't let me forget this story.
No. We were on, this is back when we had the 300 baud modem, and all that good stuff. Well, matter of fact, that was how, going back to two stories there, quick one. I had a 300 baud modem, and I was literally, back when the BBSs were out, bulletin board services, I was covering all of them all over. I had like 48 states covered. Until my wife came in one time with the phone bill. Said, we've got a problem. I said, what, hon? She goes, when the phone bill becomes more than the mortgage payment, we got to do something. I said, buy a newer modem. Went and got a $1,200.
Which was probably $1,000.
Yeah,
so
right.
Then I invite my buddy Nick over.
Yep, it's my fault.
You got to see this. He says, we got this new thing. You can sit there and browse the web and surf and go all over. It's GUI and everything else. You got to try it out. I said, okay, come on over. He comes over, loads the software on for me. He goes, now you're going to... No, I'm only going to play with this for a few minutes.
I said, I'll call you at 11. He said, no, no problem.
I said, no, I got to get up early and go to work. And I said, no sweat. I was still awake. This is back when my wife was still working at Kodak, and I did too. And my wake-up service called me at 5 o'clock, and I was still wide awake.
He turned around and called me. I pick up the phone. I'm thinking... You know, my father was at the time in a nursing home. I thought, oh, my God, what happened? I pick up the phone and hear, you son of a... I just laughed. I just started
to
laugh.
What's wrong?
I said,
I haven't been to bed yet. I found more cool websites. And, of course, my wife would say, what's this costume? It's a local cop. She loved it.
Now she loves you. But that's what you get here. You get a single connection that gives you the whole world. I don't know how you beat that.
Jay, just a comment. I've had DSL for about 3-4 months, and I want to compliment your tech support staff. They are outstanding.
Thank you. I'm going to start tapping on them tomorrow.
Also, just a quick mention, Nick and I tried for months for me to get my Ask Nick subscription emails. Couldn't do it on 2 other services. No problem on the Frontier. So that's
good
a good
to hear.
Thing.
Debbie and I've talked to her more in the last 6 months than I have to my wife. I don't know if what your husband thinks is going on between us, but it's been absolutely amazing trying to get her. She's on Ask Nick, and God bless her for that, but we couldn't get the emails to her.
What's that website again?
AskNick.com. But we couldn't get the emails to her. She tried 2 different services. They were they block everything. They just block and block and block.
Even though they swore to me they don't blacklist, they obviously do.
Right.
Well, someone else blacklisted.
Right.
You know,
I went with the Frontier mail that came with the DSL, mm-hmm. Everything's working like that.
That's what we like.
So I want to compliment that. I also want to compliment the people who come out to the house, because when we had the DSL installed, we were getting noise on the phone lines. The hardware people came out, boom, 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 15 minutes, it was all taken care of. So.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
It's
and now that I've buttered you up.
You knew this was coming. She had that other hand in a fist down here waiting to come up.
I only have my credit cards.
Well, can we have more seminars?
Yes. We're going.
Yes.
No, we need to discuss that. No, this is going to be an ongoing.
Oh, this
ongoing.
Is wonderful.
Thank you.
Yes.
Because as great as the Sunday program is, there's so many people calling in that, you know.
Well, you can't dedicate, we can't dedicate 3 hours to a single topic.
As great
which
as you
is
guys
it.
Are, these are informative.
One thing I'd like to ask, if I can jump in one more time, I'm sorry. One thing I'd like to ask is, can you let us know what you'd like the next topic to be? Out on Ask Nick, there was a... thank you. I had a survey, and I believe it's still there. This is back when I was going to do these all on my own.
Our corporate sponsor is wonderful.
So, I guess that's not it.
Yeah, but surveys. We can never choose anything because there's so many things.
Ubuntu.
Yeah.
We could do that.
Yep.
Although one thing we may want to ask is
there it is.
Let other people sign up a little bit for the next one too.
Yeah. Here it is. It's AskNick.com/survey. One survey. There's things to help make AskNick better, which is fine. But the live seminar series is the thing that we'd like people to talk about. Now, originally, like I said, I will change this. I haven't changed it yet. We had stuff for home users and stuff for business users. And then at the bottom is a question of how much would you pay for this. You may now ignore that because God bless the corporate sponsor. But we've got... it's a little late for that one for this year, but there's whole bunches of stuff down in here that you can vote on. And it's a scale of 1 to 10, and you can, you know, what we'd like you to do is 10 is the highest, and which one would I like to, you know how that goes. But that's what we'd like to see. And if there's something else you'd like to do, there's a section there to put that into. Yes?
I'd like to see something on the basic structure of the computer. You take it from partitioning right up to installing, and what
we can do that.
Put it in there.
I can bring a box in.
Put it in there.
There is a Linux users group, but not just for the Linux.
Lubar.
Yes, we got
Linux. Is Jack's list still updated?
Yeah, RIT. Lubar, Linux user group of Rochester.
I host them in the College of Business. We host them. That's my box you're on when you're...
There are dozens of users groups in town. The Apple Group meets the second Wednesday of the month at East High. PC Group is the second Tuesday of the month.
We have it on our calendar.
On the calendars, yep.
Yeah.
There used to be a website, jackslist.com. Has anyone seen Jack Grinke lately?
No, not in a long time.
He used to update this list every week. And
floor shot. And also the floor shop.
It's a little out of date, but a lot of the groups are listed there. And also in Computer Link magazine, a lot of the groups are listed as well. And I have to plug me. I got the cover of Computer Link this month. I was shocked.
Yeah. Luckily, they did not use the bikini shot, I'm just saying. And Computer Link is at techny.com. I'm sorry, go ahead.
There was another question. Someone had one.
Yes, sir.
Are you people going to install fiber optics telephone lines?
Yes.
The lines are.
When?
Next question.
The answer is yes. Yes, we are.
When I was at Kodak, just before I retired, they were installing because the copper lines were no good.
Well, right now we're seeing fiber on the poles and then copper to the house because you don't need 100 phone calls in your house.
But I was mentioning the IP TV. By the time we get to that, everything will be fiber at that point.
Well, it would have to be to do good video.
Yeah, and that's what we want is good video.
You
There's
need
a lot
a
of
tester.
Money in pay
you
for show porn.
Anyway.
So we're making it.
Tutorials for the manuals. For the
you know, I don't think it's there yet. I don't believe it's there yet. But I could say that I will be over with the tech support guys tomorrow at 8:00 when I give them your compliment, and I'll ask them about that.
It's an evolving process, and it's people like you who help make it work.
Because I think we need that. And I think you, especially right now, I think that may be some of the problems that you're seeing.
I started doing stuff before on Friday.
Right.
And then nothing happened until Tuesday because the agent of mine was in Canada last week. And then finally somebody gave me the 77 number, and then they discovered that I didn't have an Ethernet card.
Ethernet card?
Yeah.
They're probably using it over USB.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
There is something. I don't know if Jay will mention this ever, but he's kind of new in this position, and I'm expecting brilliant things from him. What happened in the past is in the past. We have Jay now, and things are.
Things are starting to happen.
If you have any confidence to give, this is the man to give it to. He can do it.
Yeah, I've been back for 2 months, so I'm working diligently to fix things.
It's after 10. I don't know how much wrapping up we need to do. Personally, I have to again thank all of the Frontier folk, Jay and Sherry, and I don't know what happened to Lynn. I don't know what happened. Lynn's back there, and all of them. They were great. They've not only jumped in with both feet to sponsor sound bites and the security tangle, but they're bringing us in to do this stuff. Clearly, they have a huge commitment to the community.
Absolutely.
And clearly, as time goes on, that's why he's here. And as time goes on, you'll see that commitment come out in a lot of ways. Give him a little time, because you know you can't do everything tomorrow. There's something we call infrastructure, and that costs something we call money.
Yeah. There's that and lots of bosses.
And the boss. Yeah. And are there any you haven't porked off yet? Are you just working your way up the line?
I went straight to the CEO. I
Excellent.
Her off right away.
Start at the top and work your way down. But I truly expect not only brilliant things, but I expect them to continue to have the conscience and to support the community in this way and the love of the community that they've shown so far. And I think these guys deserve a huge round of applause for what they've done.
Thank you.
That's a $25 job. I
got you. You got it. I'll buy you dinner.
That $10 job is out the window. It's a $25 job now. Thank you all.
Thank you. Thank you. It's most informative. It was wonderful. Thank you. Really.
Thank you. It was our pleasure. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Well, have you switched from Roadrunner to DSL?
I'm in the process thereof.
Nick.
That's one of the things. You got to have a little patience. I can't do everything.
And your Firefox.
Yeah.
All right. If you get that, can you play like a gaming, say Pogo.com?
It depends on the site. Most of them, yes.
Because I mean, I know Pogo has a lot of pop-ups and stuff like that.
If you've got enough memory, you can run both Firefox and Internet Explorer simultaneously. Or you can shut down one and boot the other and shut down that one.
All right, but you can have both on the same system.
Absolutely, never a problem.
Okay, thank you.
In fact, I run them simultaneously myself. Thank you, sir.
In Firefox, you can look at passwords. Can you add any passwords to that list?
You can by just going to the site and saying save the password.
Some will save it, some won't.
There's a box you need to check every time, and in some cases, if the site is secure, they don't want you to save the password. That's the other end making that decision.
Okay. That's the other end.
Yeah. Jay? This guy?
Yeah.
Jay. J-A-Y. Wally Yardo. G. Spelled the usual way. G-U-A. G. L. I-A. R-D-O. Wally Yardo.
So type in those things. Website I gave you.
Oh, I will, but not. I don't know what you're showing me, so I'm going to say.
It's nothing.
All right. Give me a few minutes then. Yes.
Nick, I've had two competent computer people try to help me.
Well, congratulations, they don't need me.
I think just run it before I can open a program. If I right click on it or shortcut it, this window pops and I can run it, and it'll have what do they call it, a radio dial and a check mark, and it'll say,
what is your antivirus program and what is your firewall program?
McAfee or firewall or AOL or firewall.
You need to talk to Dave. I don't do AOL. Oh, careful. You're standing on the...
They're telling me this is and it's into an administrative user.
So it's asking you to run it as a specific user?
Right. And I have to click off the check mark to run the program. If I don't, it has user down there, I can put a username. See, nobody has seen this.
Nor have I. How weird is that? I have not seen it.
So how? See, I got to have something that you can use, because I don't.
Yeah.
If you've never seen it, I guess. And I've gone and run it. I mean, I've actually typed the words in. I Google. I was talking a little bit in the last time. I'm going to help. Typed all these reviews. It's a problem because it's on Google.
Right.
So, but I can't understand all of this.
Because he may have hit it. Because he does. I don't do tech support on a daily basis for that sort of thing anymore. You know, for home users and things like that. So I haven't seen it, but he might have.
Okay.
I'm not trying to blow you off, but I'm saying he may have seen it.
If not,
you can bring your system down to him in his shop and make it happen. Right? So that's probably your best bet. So talk to him.
Annoying. Anytime you want to open up any program, it just comes up and you click.
Yeah, right. Absolutely my pleasure.
You could
oh, that's me.
And you would get all the questions.
That's what I heard. Well, and that's part of the problem. And God bless the folks at Frontier, for they stepped forward and said, we know people need help. We know that we can provide this for them, and let's do it. And I think it's phenomenal.
But if you need to
Right.
I appreciate you.
No, thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Hi.
I want to tell you, first of all, I'm a qualified voice coach. I appreciate you. I've learned tons. I'm not a big computer person. I have just heard a lot. I'm going to ask you a couple more questions. Just that one of the systems just came a couple of days ago. Can you say that it's
Yeah. I've changed. I've added a thing. Well, this is an overview. Right, it's just an overview. Step two, you actually download the files, and step three is where you actually.
You can put that in the skip the page. White Oldsmobile out in the parking lot.
Step three is actually to reboot in the safe.
I've been doing it for a while, so.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I got to make it clear that's an overview.
Don't you want to have people respect you after you get rid of the file?
Do I have that in the other order? Yes, your podcast. Sure. If you go to the Soundbites website,
if you want to put
it on
that,
because I can't
watch
it. I got on that podcast the link because this is your link, and I don't know how to do it once I get on it.
Oh, you need a podcasting program, and now iTunes will do podcasting. So what you do is, I don't know where it is. No, there it is. Here's your feed. Right? So what you do is you put this link in iTunes. There's a section for podcasts. You put this link in there.
Well, and then when you get into that section for podcasts, there's a command that says subscribe. Subscribe to feed. There's got to be a way to do that automatically.
In iTunes?
In iTunes, yeah.
You got to get in iTunes.
Yeah, I don't know of a way to do that automatically. Yeah, put that link and then say subscribe. He'll show you. He's got it right there.
Okay.
Where's iTunes? iTunes? This
is amazing. Talking to Steve, I want to get my wife's got weather bug.
Get off it.
I know. I'd like her to. I've got my own system.
Podcast.
I don't have a problem.
Good.
Advanced.
Tell her we said it's crap.
I know.
And then you enter the address into there that you copy off of the Soundbites page.
Other than that,
you can also find.
Where does she spend most of her time?
I don't think I'm on the internet now. In the music store. There's a section for podcasts, and you can find any of the thousands of podcasts that they already
I don't know, she does a lot.
Have available.
She works for AOL with
mm-hmm.
in that list.
Chat hosts
yep.
and stuff, so she's
and
there
then
for quite
once
a while.
I do, because I don't
then
I
she
download
should go with
mm-hmm.
one
to do
that's
do
down
it,
in
Firefox. This is it, Firefox. I can go right here and say, what's the temperature right now?
Then how do
tells me what the wind is, tells me what tomorrow is going to be, tells me what the next day is going to be.
What period do you have?
Shows
okay.
me the. I can bring up the thingy
you
there.
Have to read its manual.
I haven't
find
done
out
that,
how you
I was gonna
copy
get
files. iTunes is designed to work with the iPod. You plug in your iPod, it copies everything automatically.
Okay.
Everything else you have to do manually.
Right. So you can do it all. In fact, you don't even have to bring it up.
Probably when you plug your tongue screen in, it shows up on your desktop, and you can just drag files.
So you can
to
do
it.
That.
There's
and if she spends all day in that thing, it's right here.
Download
doesn't
spend all day
there.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. One of the topics.
Yes.
Yeah. I'll put it on the survey. Networking within the house.
Yep. Yes. Stick it in the survey.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna collate everything. I won't remember anything now.
Well, I know. But I've tried to hook them up. We got them routers.
Several hundred fixes in SVG.
Yeah. Got a router for the.
So the best thing to do is
Rogue Runner
your
cable and stuff.
Your
the tool
and
stuff.
And see if they have any special updates.
I still can't get it. Well, this is for each other.
You son of a pup, you!
That should be able to do it.
Sorry, excuse me. Just want a truck.
Well, no, it's a while ago.
Sure. Well, right.
I only spent 45 minutes.
Is that all?
I'll ask
right.
you a question.
Mm-hmm.
What's the reasonable
thank you.
Schedule?
No, thank you.
No.
Right.
You
okay
she gets your emails and then she forwards them to me so I can get
you
know, file transfers like that.
She doesn't understand half of it.
It depends. Time of day, size of file, who else is on the network.
I'm
shut down now anyway.
tried
on
to
your own from
your own computer.
Yeah, 100 megs.
A couple of the machines are a local Ryan Linux, a couple of Ryan 98.
Right.
So they're hammered by the OS.
I don't have problems.
Right.
She's got the HP and she's had problems
in the MPU directories. There are settings inside of Windows. Windows is optimized for average files.
I've got a long drive home to
You can optimize it for small files. You can optimize it for big files. So if you optimize it for big files, the small files take longer.
Wherever you want to go.
So if everything is on average.
Frontier 1, it's got to be the 17.
Yeah.
Okay. And that just means the speed. And if I start transferring a file, I'll see speed.
17, right?
My kid recovered file 5.
We had fun.
I really don't see a big difference in my guy.
Well, we got people interested in out and that's
not. You won't unless you copy large files.
Yeah.
Frequently.
I was just wondering.
All my wife's photographs and everything.
It's not a big deal.
Yeah.
It's not like you're trying to download a whole CD or something.
And that's what a lot of people do.